Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Friends, September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy. See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel. AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's left channel. Left channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. CBS News has learned the execution of Saddam Hussein likely will be by this weekend. CBS News correspondent David Martin.
Saddam Hussein is still in American custody, but a U.S. military officer says that the U.S. military plans to turn him over to the Iraqis within the next 36 hours. The same officer says that he expects the Iraqis will execute him before the start of a religious holiday on Sunday, which marks the conclusion of the annual pilgrimage to Mecca.
More from CBS's Randall Pinkston in Baghdad.
There will be witnesses. Iraqis will be there, members of the coalition, presumably, of course, U.S. officials, and some international observers.
More details tonight on the CBS Evening News. President Bush met with his national security team today to talk about strategy in Iraq and briefed reporters afterward.
Got more consultation to do until I talk to the country about the plan. Obviously, we'll continue to work with the Iraqi government.
The North Carolina State Bar has filed an ethics complaint against prosecutor Mike Nifong over his handling of the Duke LaCrosse sex assault case. Nifong's being accused of breaking four rules of the bar. CBS's Jim Crisula in Durham.
The complaint accuses the embattled Duke LaCrosse rape case prosecutor of breaking rules of professional conduct, included in the list, making comments that, quote, have a substantial likelihood of heightening public condemnation of the accuser. The North Carolina State Bar's punishment for ethics violations ranges from admonishment to disbarment.
CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
It is distinct from the case itself against the Duke students, and it shouldn't by itself preclude the case from going forward. In other words, even if Nifong is found after a hearing to have violated any or all of these ethical rules, there will still be a sex assault case.
Dining on the meat of a cloned animal. Sound good to you?
No, I'm not eating no cloned animal. No. It's disgusting.
The company motto of Viagen, a leader in animal cloning, is preserving and multiplying superior genetics. Viagen's president, Mark Walton, agrees with the FDA that food from clones is safe. He claims this tool would even help producers of natural meats.
To grow without growth hormone, to maintain health and vigor without antibiotics.
Critics scoff, accusing the FDA of rushing to judgment in the face of widespread consumer concerns. A public comment period now begins. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Now we know both new homes and existing home sales rose in November by better-than-expected numbers, and consumer confidence hit an 8-month high last month. National Association of Realtors, David Luray.
Sellers are now more flexible. They're bringing their prices down. Buyers are now nibbling. They're biting, and they're actually buying right now. They're off the sidelines.
Wall Street, the Dow lost 9 points, NASDAQ off 5 2/3. This is CBS News.
I need Cheerios and Listerine, Huggies, Pepsi, and Pantene, GE Lights and 409. If I spill, it's bounty time. Dollar General, that's the spot. Look at everything I got.
It's clearance days at Dollar General. Get 50% off already everyday low prices on all Christmas merchandise through January 15th. And 25% off all fall and winter clothing through January 22nd. See our circular for details. Save time, save money, every day.
Dollar General. Are you thinking about buying one of those inexpensive memory foam mattresses? Think again. Tempur-Pedic is the only mattress made from authentic Tempur material. The one that shapes and contours to your body, guaranteeing a restful, rejuvenating night's sleep. Those knockoffs don't even come close. Call Tempur-Pedic today at 1-800-805-3495, and they'll send you a free video, a sample of the proprietary Tempur material, and a 90-day trial certificate. You won't get that from those other guys. Tempur-Pedic is the real deal. Call 1-800-805-3495.
The body of an American climber found in remote southwestern China is Charlie Fowler, and the indication is it was not a climbing miscue that killed him and, it's believed, Christine Boscoff. It was an avalanche.
The likelihood from the scenario is that they were walking together, especially since they weren't roped, that there's no reason for them to be far apart, and that this avalanche most likely took both of them.
Search spokeswoman Arlene Burns says they will continue to look for Boscoff's body. A 20-year-old man is in jail near San Antonio. A 16-year-old girl is dead. They were reportedly playing Russian roulette in the pre-dawn hours, one bullet in the gun. He stayed lucky. She did not. Bexar County Sheriff's deputies say there may be charges against the man and the girl's death. Like any gambling game, they say if you play long enough, you will lose. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
How would you like to... At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
From our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
6 minutes after the hour, my name is Lee Rayburn, broadcasting live from Madison, Wisconsin this afternoon or evening, wherever you may be. Filling in for Rachel Maddow, who's on a much-deserved vacation. She will return next week after the new year, and wanted to start this evening, if I could, by speaking, you know, I've just had the worst Christmas I've ever had. I was unemployed. There was the threat here in Madison that we would lose our Air America affiliate, a threat that the people and the power of the people here in our community has overturned. The article in the New York Times over the holidays lays out the story, and I won't go through it again. But as a result, I was unemployed. I did the morning show on the Air America affiliate here in Madison and lost my job just after the election. It was the first Christmas I've ever had where I didn't have a job. And so, therefore, my greatest gift from my parents this year was cash, and my gift to them was papier-mâché ornaments made with newspaper and paste and toenail polish I just happened to have on hand around the apartment. But these 2 hours of the day filling in for Rachel have made for one of the greatest weeks of my life, without a doubt. Just a couple of weeks ago, you know, I was ready to go back to flipping burgers with some friends. And here approaching the end of the week, I'm being courted like I'm cute again by radio folks. And I would like to take this likely once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to talk directly to someone who may be able to do something about this. I have to get it off my chest. I'm hoping that you are someone who has the power to pull back the reins, change the course of this country. Someone who knows our almighty decider, perhaps, or at least someone who can please tell someone else who matters. First of all, let me say there is no way to exit a war with pride that you've entered into shamefully. The only thing you can do is save our lives and save our money and stop the endless heartbreak, stop the needless death and destruction right now. We need to begin dealing directly with the problems we have here at home. Please start by treating each veteran like a hero and not a liability, fully funding any physical and mental health care they require for the rest of their lives, making sure that there are enough doctors for all of them. It is the least we can do, and we both know that. If you need to, you can make more doctors. Fully subsidize medical school if you have to. Make sure that anyone who wants to become a doctor and is qualified to become a doctor can. After all, after military service, it's hard to imagine a more noble occupation than that of a healer. Please, person in a position of power, restore the Gulf Coast for the benefit of the people of this country and not just the corporations? I mean, is it really so hard to believe that American companies would have the pride to put patriotism before profit and see themselves rebuild an amazing, one-of-a-kind city? There is no excuse on this good earth that would explain why American refugees from so long ago are not home by now. None. There's no reason in the world for you not to make this happen today. While so many cities are becoming strip malls with the same stores, no matter where you go, New Orleans was a one-of-a-kind place on this earth that we all used to brag about. You can make sure we're able to brag about it again. You also need to rebuild at Ground Zero in Manhattan. Man, you can finally close a chapter in this national nightmare. That is, if you want to. It's an opportunity to build a wonder of the world, standing in the face of tyranny at home and abroad, making a perfect complement to Lady Liberty and truly the greatest city on earth. If you are an American and you can do something about this, there is no justification to explain why you wouldn't. None. Is it really so hard to believe that you and the powerful few wouldn't want history to remember you as saving our cities as opposed to just allowing them to fester and rot? You most likely, a sir, I guess, shouldn't have to wait to restore New Orleans and rebuild Ground Zero to start on something just as essential. Making health care a right, not a privilege. Make it a constitutional amendment if you have to get past all the insurance lobbyists and all the money changers. You are most likely already subsidizing med school students at this point, so why not create a land where we're all allowed to see a healer once in a while? I haven't had health insurance in over 2 years, and at this point I think that everything on my body is a lump, even the lumps. And even if you have the most expensive doctors, it's too dangerous for so many of us to have so little care. An unhealthy community makes all of us susceptible, and that means you too. You can start with the children, mothers, and the unborn. That way, you can use your silly pro-life card if you have to. Then make it happen for me. I'll wait, but not for long. Then there are those solutions that seem so obvious that I get mad at you just thinking about them. The only moral solution to poverty, as I see it, is opportunity. Opportunity through equal and amazing education. Education, let's face it, is unequivocally unequal and inadequate in this country, and that is unforgivable. It is worth whatever the charge to make sure that every child has the tools he or she needs to fulfill their potential, whatever it may be. And you can start by giving each student equal access to education. Then start by paying teachers what they're worth, and don't stop until they're making six-figure salaries. They should be our celebrities. I will never forget mine, even though none were as beautiful as Natalie Portman. Oh, Natalie, they deserve every penny, and any child will tell you this. There is no obstacle to accomplishing this either, other than the fact that no one speaks on behalf of the kids. I'm telling you on their behalf. Our future depends on it, obviously. Since you should already be subsidizing med school, then it wouldn't be a stretch to pay for all college and university educations. Anyone around that age would tell you the same thing if they didn't feel so damn doomed by the way our world looks now and the bleak future they expect to enter. Can you tell that I'm the product of two parents who taught at a public school? Listen, make it happen. It won't eliminate poverty, but at least it will become a choice. If you're one of the powerful people, I'm guessing that you're also one of the moneyed, one of the wealthy, one of the very few, and I seriously want to warn you. I want to warn you to share. Share or we will take. And this is not a threat. It's just history repeating itself over and over again. When the few have so much and the rest of us are left without so much as a doctor, a teacher, and a new textbook, what do you expect? How much do you need? I'm living on $300 a week, and I'm a peaceful man, which is exactly why I tell you that there is no fenced-in community, gated yard, ADT secure home that is going to be safe from the backlash that your greed will have reaped. There is no place in known history where this has not occurred, and only you can prevent it. If anyone argues to you that they can't afford this, I want to let you know that you can't afford not to. If you don't, the cost will be equal for each and every one of us, but the loss will be greatest for you. Besides, all of this is cheaper than all of your wars. When you accomplish these necessities, it will be easy to restore and expand our personal privacy, please. You won't have to worry. No one will want to hurt this great land ever again. And if anyone tries, we'll stand and fight for the land we love. You can also end this tragic joke of the prison business. Leading the rest of the world in percent of people behind bars is no way to earn their respect. The incarceration rate of people of color in this country is preposterous, and you know it. Restore hope, please, by limiting prisons only to those who are judged a danger to us by their peers. Addressing health care for mental illness and addiction and education opportunities will eliminate the majority of violence against others anyway. This is the safest way to marginalize our enemies and become a role model and moral authority for our friends. Our right to be independent is the cornerstone of our country. Please abide by this basic tenet, which along with equal opportunity allows the great democratic experiment to flourish. Who knows what we'll come up with next? Restore our freedom here at home and our right to privacy. No one living in a country that you could create would ever do it any harm, and we would never let anyone else hurt a nation as amazing as ours. As logical as the tall tales of creationism are, I got to tell you, I still believe in evolution, and I believe that the time has come to adapt and evolve. The world has grown too small to do anything else. Evolution comes and ebbs and flows, and while we may not be biologically ready to take the next step as a community, we are ready now, and we can evolve today. These are simple steps that only you can take for us, and time, as always, is of the essence. You may not think you can accomplish all this, but this may be the only chance I ever get to speak to you, so I want to make it worth my while being coast to coast tonight on Air America Radio. If you can't get this done, please find someone who can. If you two can't get it done, find 10 others willing to try. And if they can't get it done, find a dozen more. And if they can't do it, please find as many people as it takes to make this nation truly great. Thank you. And I want to recognize the fourth principle of Kwanzaa tonight that I am celebrating. This is my holiday that I'm celebrating. It's the third principle tonight on the third day of Kwanzaa. Pardon me. It's Ujima, collective work and responsibility. And that is what we recognize as we roll on the Rachel Maddow Show this evening, taking a look at people power on the march in the 110th Congress and how you, yeah, you, no matter who you are, can really change the world. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow on The Rachel Maddow Show, 15 minutes after the hour right now on the Air America Radio Network.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's The Randy Rhoads Show.
Theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... All right, new rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me is that tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Hey, listen.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to stackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's stackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, stackjobs.com is a click away. At stackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show at 19 minutes after the hour. I am Lee Rayburn, broadcasting from Madison, Wisconsin, today. And we'll be in tomorrow as well. Join us later in the next hour as we will be speaking with John Nichols, the author of The Genius of Impeachment, as well as a writer for The Nation online at thenation.com. Celebrating the third night of Kwanzaa tonight, this evening, with the seven principles of Kwanzaa. Tonight's principle we recognize is Ujima, the collective work and responsibility. And it is with that theme that we bring up one of my Midwestern heroes, and that would be the late Senator Paul Wellstone, one of the leaders in the progressive movement. And for anybody who ever gets an opportunity to attend a Camp Wellstone session, if you ever wanted to learn how to change the world, that would be the best way to do it. And so it is with that that we bring you tonight's news about people power on the march as we head towards the christening of the 110th Congress and Nancy Pelosi's promised first 100 hours, not 100 days, 100 hours. And this about, we start with legislation named after the late Senator Paul Wellstone, legislation which now advocates for mental health think they have a good chance of getting through Congress to pass legislation next year that would require equal health insurance coverage for mental and physical illnesses. A lot of the homelessness that I've seen, even here in Madison, Wisconsin, a lot of the violence and the crime that I've seen can be related to mental illness and the lack of treatment for mental illness. And we're seeing post-traumatic stress disorder in horrendous numbers with our returning veterans right now that must be treated for the welfare of all of us in our nation. After all, it's the least we can do for them, right? So now legislation named after the late Senator Paul Wellstone has the strong support in Congress, even though in the past it's run into GOP roadblocks. It's real simple. Equal health insurance coverage for mental and physical illnesses. Who could disagree with that? Well, people trying to profit on our mental and physical illnesses, for one. But they should be able to make a profit all the same, even if we're given equal access. I couldn't see how not, unless you're just a terrible business person. And the last congressional session, the 109th Do-Nothing Congress, 231 House members, that's more than half, signed on as co-sponsors to the Wellstone bill that would create the equal health insurance coverage for mental and physical illnesses. In 2003, Senate Democrats tried to win passage of this bill as a tribute to the late Senator Paul Wellstone, who had died a year earlier. Republicans blocked an attempt to pass it by unanimous consent. Why wasn't it passed in the 109th Congress? It wasn't even allowed to be brought up for a vote by Republican leadership. That will change under the new House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi. And all of a sudden, the people's will be furthered. The collective work and responsibility we all aspire to as progressives, liberals, Democrats, whatever you call ourselves, as long as it's just not for the few, but for the majority. This bill will come up for a vote on the House floor. This, according to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and confirmed again by her spokesperson, a lobbyist for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, said the bill was not a mandate, saying we don't want to get in the trap of making a mandate. It's equal opportunity, equal health care. We all need a healer once in a while, even those who can't afford one. It should be a right, not a privilege. And that's what's going to happen in the 110th Congress. People power on the march. And it continues with reports that even the president now is agreeing to increase our minimum wage for the first time in, what, 9-10 years? I'm in the state of Wisconsin where we have, on our own, along with many other states across the country, increased our minimum wage. And guess what? It hasn't cost any jobs. Guess what? It hasn't made anything worse. In fact, it's made life better for all of us. President Bush has now told reporters, according to the AFL-CIO's website, and I want to, by the way, plug AFL-CIO, organized labor, and I want to thank them personally for my weekends, my 40-hour work weeks, and my labor protections. I owe you guys. So now the president himself is saying that he will raise and agree to raise the minimum wage as it stands today from $5.15 an hour to $7.25 an hour. However, like his Christmas card, There is an asterisk at the end. You know, my imaginary Christmas card from the Bush family, which I didn't get in the mail this year, so I'm sure it was lost. I just imagined it was a photograph of the White House, but in front of that was the wrought iron fence, and in front of that was a black homeless man, with the slogan underneath that says, "Peace on Earth, asterisk, goodwill towards man, asterisk, asterisk." And you read the fine print, and it's peace on earth as long as you live in a gated community and fenced-in yard and ADT secure home, and goodwill towards white heterosexual men, or at least Republicans who are in the closet still. Shame. He wants to. So now there is the report that the president going to agree to increase the minimum wage. Asterisk. What's the asterisk stand for? He wants to combine the increase in the minimum wage to make sure we get more tax relief and regulatory relief for businesses. You know, they're aching for that next tax break. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney had this to say. The remarks by President Bush calling for a minimum wage raise is only if coupled with more tax breaks for businesses makes it painfully clear that the president has learned nothing from the message working people sent to the polls in November. Now, incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, as part of her first 100 hours, has promised a vote on the minimum wage increase. And who's dare says no? Minimum wage workers have waited for too long, while big business has gone ahead and already seen their huge tax breaks and the rollbacks of regulations under this Bush administration. They've seen billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in tax cuts since George W. took office. Now, this has happened before. The past attempts to sink minimum wage legislation with the provisions like cutting the wages of tipped workers or eliminating the 40-hour work week, those have always been attached to minimum wage increases, and we need to prepare ourselves to fight to make sure that doesn't happen again. Let's make sure Congress serves the least of us, because it will benefit all of us. Now, having said that, there are threats to the people power in the 110th Congress. There have already been calls from Senator Joseph Biden that there will be investigations into the abuse of power, the abuse of our tax dollars, and the abuse coming from the White House. Well, President Bush is now bracing for what could be an onslaught of investigations by our new Democratic-led Congress, the 110th Congress. He's hiring a new slew of lawyers, some ringers for the White House, and preparing to play defense in terms of releasing documents, which would implicate him, no doubt. So in the days after the November election, the White House announced that President Bush has hired two replacement lawyers in the counsel's office, one who specializes in handling white-collar crime. White-collar crime, anyone? Why would they do such a thing? What do you suspect? We'll talk about it next. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow on The Rachel Maddow Show this evening on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's Enid Live, weekday afternoon.
Win fast, win often.
The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Burning, now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on an extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
At Cash Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
New rule, Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show at 34 minutes after the hour. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow this evening, live from Madison, Wisconsin, talking about people power on the march in the 110th Congress, as we are seeing a move towards increasing the minimum wage, unless, of course, the president wants to sink it again with tax breaks for big business. We're looking at equal health care, health insurance coverage for mental and physical illnesses, in the Wellstone health care bill, but we're also looking at the White House currently lawyering up and preparing for an onslaught of investigations as to whether or not anything was amiss in this administration. I can't come up with a damn thing I can think they did that would be incriminating. Just a long list, a laundry list of, start with New Orleans, go to Iraq, maybe even the opium in Afghanistan. You can go on and on forever.
And that is why it is important to bring up tonight this story appearing last night in the AP wire. Inspector General, the inspectors general are entrusted in their job to find the fraud in our government, find the abuse in our federal spending, and nail our federal agencies and hold them accountable for our money, our tax dollars. We're finding that these inspectors general in our federal government are now increasingly under attack. In the last year, just looking back over 2006, there have been several inspectors who felt the wrath of government bosses because they stood up and blew the whistle. Whistleblowers should be protected no matter what, because they are the ones, after all, who are working for us. They are the ones, after all, who keep our government on the straight and narrow. Here are some examples of inspectors general that have been attacked by people of power in the last year, and we must make the commitment to never allow this to happen in the 110th Congress. It will be the Congress of people power, where the 109th Congress, obviously the do-nothing Congress, and will go down in history as such. The top official of the government's property and supply agency compared its inspector general to a terrorist. He's going to blow up something. So the top official for the government's property and supply agency said that my inspector general is a terrorist because he was trying to end an audit of the General Services Administration regional offices and private businesses. Directors of the government's legal aid program discussed firing their inspector general in the past year, who investigated how top officials spent our money for limousine services. That's right. We can't afford a car, but hey, you take a limousine for their ritzy hotels and $14 death by chocolate desserts. That's what we're paying for? Oh, that and rebuilding the levees in New Orleans. Oh, at least we know we're paying for the death by chocolate, courtesy of our inspectors general. The Pentagon has been making its inspector general use lawyers that they pick, that the defense secretary picks himself, instead of independently hired attorneys, forcing the Pentagon inspector general to be, at some level, beholden to the defense secretary. There's no independence. There's no oversight when that takes place. The job of two watchdogs have had to be rescued in the past year by Congress. Republican Representative Duncan Hunter from California is the outgoing chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He put language in a defense bill to close down the Iraq inspector general by the end of 2007. You can only imagine why. Stuart Bowen Jr., the inspector general for Iraq spending, conducted high-profile investigations about how what will end up being over $1 trillion of expenditures in this damn godforsaken war in Iraq, how that money has been spent in the Iraqi reconstruction. He found missing weapons, wasted billions, our money, by the way, and overspending straight to the pockets of Halliburton by name. Something else we need to be on the lookout for, and that is the revolving door in politics. If we can make this stop, we should. Talked last night a little bit about Senator Barack Obama's appearance of impropriety with an intern he had last summer and a property dispute that he had when he bought his land in suburban Chicago. I said at that point, if Senator Obama was going to run for president, he should stand and get in front of the ethics issue by making ethics reform real, by making sure it is a priority. We all want to see it, unless, of course, we're getting our money off of K Street. And if that's the case, well, you're not working for me anyway. Gail Norton, you may remember her as a former Secretary of the Interior. She's back working again at energy development, just like she did in the government. Issues on public lands, just like she did in the government. This time only she's working for Royal Dutch Shell. Just a couple of months ago, Gail Norton resigned her cabinet post as President Bush's Interior Secretary. She has now accepted an offer to serve as counsel for Royal Dutch Shell, who, as in theory, Interior Secretary, she was supposed to keep in check. of course, I am crying foul. Government watchdog groups are crying foul. Environmental groups are crying foul. And have long said that Gail Norton gave energy companies everything they wanted as she was Interior Secretary. You don't think she expected something in return? Well, she got it. Nice, cushy job where she'll be able to work from home on behalf of Royal Dutch Shell. Whatever Royal Dutch Shell's investment was in Gail Norton, whatever they're paying her, It was worth what they got out of the government while she worked there. It's the revolving door that must end. During Norton's tenure at the Department of Interior, rules pertaining to the oil and gas permitting were eased. It allowed the Bureau of Land Management to go ahead and speed up leasing process for natural gas extraction, leaving vulnerable many of our natural habitats that we still have. This was the Jonah Field and Pinedale Anticline in the upper Green River Basin of Wyoming, across the state in the Powder River Basin, and also in New Mexico, Colorado, Utah. The Department of Interior under Gail Norton also waived royalty payments assessed against private oil companies for 2 years. That amounted to, according to the Government Accountability Office report, a cost to us, the taxpayers, of $10 billion. Her looking the other way as a Secretary of Department of Interior cost us $10 billion in giveaways to big corporations who could have afforded it much easier than we could have. This all has to end. And when do we get, and this is, you know, this is why I struggle with, you know, I vote Democratic, but I had struggle saying that I'm a Democrat until the Democrats make this a part of their platform that they stand behind. And I know Nancy Pelosi wants ethics reform, but she has to stand behind it, and we have to move forward toward it. It should be a cornerstone of her first 100 hours and the people power on the march in the 110th Congress. It is our Congress. We voted for them as a referendum on not only the war in Iraq, but the ethics on Washington, in Washington, D.C., and the corruption and collusion with our legislators and the K Street lobbyists. This all has to stop. And there's one more note here of crime and punishment that deserves to be mentioned. It looks like one governor-elect will not be prosecuted. The Nevada governor-elect, Jim Gibbons, you should know, will not be prosecuted on allegations that he assaulted a cocktail waitress in a parking garage 3 weeks before the election. According to the Clark County District Attorney, it was a he said, she said case. He said being the governor-elect, and she said being a mere cocktail waitress. In that case, the charges have been dropped. So Nevada's governor-elect, Mr. Grab Hands, Jimmy Gibbons, he's getting away scot-free. Prosecutors will continue to investigate, however, separate allegations made by the cocktail waitress that people associated with the governor-elect of Nevada tried to interfere with the investigation by influencing her testimony. The cocktail waitress told the AP yesterday, and this is her quote, "I actually even said that if he apologized to me, I would drop everything. He wasn't man enough to actually apologize. He knows the truth, and I know the truth." You can speculate all you want, but when it comes down to a he said, she said, and he's a governor-elect, and she's a cocktail waitress, who wins? Interesting fallout from the Gerald Ford's grave yesterday. I don't know if you saw this Bob Woodward story in the Washington Post, and an interview he did with Gerald Ford from a couple of years ago about what that former Republican president felt about the war in Iraq. It has created some ripples. How dare Gerald Ford disrespect W from his grave? Let's cover that next. Take a look at what happened in Iraq today. 99 U.S. troops killed in Iraq this month. It is the, as the holiday carol goes, second most deadliest month of the year in Iraq for our troops. So what's it take to just bring them home? What's it take to stop this? I ask you because I don't have the answer. But as we look towards Iraq coming up here, if you want to chime in, 866-303-2270 is the number to the Air America Studios, 866-303-2270. So the people power on the march in the 110th Congress, and warnings and threats to the people power in the 110th Congress. Thought you should know about them. We'll move on now and take a look at Iraq and how the people power can stop this godforsaken, unjustifiable, ungodly war. That's next here on the Rachel Maddow Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow this evening on Air America Radio.
Rachel is blogging, and you can read it at maddowonline.com. The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
Win fast, win often.
The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson Windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left-channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to hallswindowcenter.com. Click on the Green Seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALL. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show. My name is Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel this week, my hero. And as part of her inspiration, I wanted to ask you a simple question. How do we stop this ungodly, unjustifiable, godforsaken war in Iraq? It weighs on me because it is my money, it is my voice, and this exercise of democracy. In theory, I should have a way to stop it, and yet I feel powerless. Do you? Gerald Ford did. The late former President Gerald Ford, in an embargoed interview with Bob Woodward in the Washington Post, had this to say, speaking from the grave. Rumsfeld and Cheney, you know, his former chiefs of staff, and the president made a big mistake in justifying going into the war in Iraq. They put the emphasis on weapons of mass destruction, and now, I've never said it publicly, but I thought they made a mistake. I felt very strongly it was an error in how they should justify what they were going to do. I can understand the theory of wanting to free people. I'm skeptical whether you can detach that from the obligations, obligation number one of what's in our nation's interest. And I just don't think we should go hellfire damnation around the globe freeing people unless it is directly related to our own national security. It was an interview that Gerald Ford gave to Bob Woodward in 2005, last year. For a future book that was embargoed until Gerald Ford passed away. Now, just quick as a whip, the same Republicans who were extolling the virtues of Gerald Rudolph Ford yesterday, today are quick to condemn the man as how dare he, like how dare anybody else, take to task W for his actions in our name with our money. Bill Bennett, you know, the, Daily Coast calls him the degenerate gambler. There's other names you can call him, too. We won't do that here. Had this to say about Gerald Ford. How decent, how courageous is what Gerald Ford did with Bob Woodward? He slams Bush and Cheney to Woodward in 2004, but asks Woodward not to print the interview until he's dead. How about telling Woodward not to run the interview until after Bush and Cheney are out of office? So Bill Bennett, all of a sudden suggesting that Gerald Ford was a coward. Really? Think about it. If you were a person in a position of power and you'd seen what happened to everybody else that had spoken out against the Bush administration's actions in the Middle East, what would you expect? And the best question I have found comes from DailyCoast.com this evening, and I offer it up to you. What does it say about the American political climate when a Republican ex-president, a 90-plus-year-old man, who hasn't been moving in D.C. circles for years, feels intimidated in expressing his views on the biggest and most important issue of the day? If it wasn't outright fear, it was at least Ford's anticipation of harassment and smearing he'd be in for daring to express his doubts in opposition. I haven't heard it said anywhere else. Of course, then there's what John Edwards had to say this morning from the festering hole that was once New Orleans's Ninth Ward. When addressing the issue in Iraq, he has announced his bid for presidency in 2008. I would say his work in the last couple of years for the Southern Poverty Law Center certainly makes him qualified to work for me and the likes of me. I think he's a good candidate. This is what he had to say about Iraq. I happen to agree.
The biggest responsibility of the next president of the United States is to reestablish America's leadership role in the world, starting with Iraq. And we need to make it clear that we intend to leave Iraq and turn over the responsibility of Iraq to the Iraqi people. The best way to make that clear is to actually start leaving, which is why I've said we ought to be taking 40 to 50,000 troops out now, and that ought to continue over time.
Now. Right now. Well, leave it to the right-wing spin cycle to bring up their defense, and their defense comes today from the National Review's Cliff May, who has a hat tip to Washington Monthly for turning me on to this, because I wouldn't go to the National Review website unless I had to. There was a comment from an unnamed Marine on the National Review website today who was serving in Iraq, and the comment reads this: "Hey, morale among our guys is very high. They not only believe that they're winning, but they are winning decisively. They're stunned and dismayed by what they see in the American press, whom they almost universally view as against them. The embedded reporters are despised and distrusted. They're inflicting casualties at a rate of 20 to 1, and they see stuff like, 'Are we losing in Iraq?' on TV and the print media. Bottom line, though, and they all say this, is that there are not enough guys there to drive the final stake through the heart of the insurgency, because there aren't enough troops in theater to shut down the borders with Iran and Syria." Does that letter seem familiar to you? I'm willing to wager that I believe I heard the same letter read on Rachel Maddow's show. You see, this wasn't a letter. This was a form that was sent out, a talking points that was sent out almost a year ago now. These were the exact talking points approved by the White House and supporters of the war that went out a year ago. National Review printed it today to say, hey, look, we're winning, everybody. Because somebody's got to say something in defense of this godforsaken war. The nearly identical text from National Review's website was part of an email from a year ago. It was the same language. It was the same statement. The National Review folks, in order to get good news coming out of Iraq, have to go to the White House first, and even then, it's over a year old. 866-303-2270. And if you can help me end this war, I would like to know how to try, because I'm willing to put the work into it. It's worth it for me, for my conscience. It weighed heavily on me over this holiday season. And as part of our third evening of celebration of Kwanzaa, Ujima, collective work and responsibility, collectively let's stop this damn war. 866-303-2270. Paul on a cell phone calling from Eugene, Oregon, which I dearly love. You are on Air America Radio.
Oh, hey, thanks for all you do.
Hey, thanks for being with me.
Hey, here's a ticket for you. Edwards Gore. How's that?
Edwards Gore, I like it. It's environmental. It's helping the poor. It's ending the war. Where's the downside? Oh, yeah, they've lost already. But even then, that's debatable.
Hey, you know, in the past 15 years, nothing is impossible. But here's a thought on the passing of President Ford. I'm 52. I remember when I was young listening to my parents, born in the Depression, come through the Second World War, both of them in the European theater. I remember them over their vodka tonics, gin and tonics, and bridge games throughout my childhood in the 60s, into the 50s and 60s. I remember them talking and asking them a question as they became more and more disenchanted in the 70s, 80s, 90s. All of them have passed. They are gone now, and I think they're glad to be gone. I asked them, well, they told me, yeah, it was time to go. They didn't want to see, they did not experience George, experience W. Anyway, and I remember asking them the question, and these very bright individuals, New York-based, European-based, used to say the first thing they saw, the beginning of the change that troubled them so much, was indeed Ford's pardoning of Nixon. It turned a corner.
Wasn't that the milestone
milestone.
You know what? We don't. There are some people who are above the law, specifically the people who decide what the laws are. Those people happen to be above the law. And that's the way I see the pardon. I was a little young to remember it back in the day. But as I look back on it now, it seems like there are people who are above the law.
And they talked in the Times today, of course, of the moment he did it, his popularity went down, and Democrats and Republicans turned against him. But my thought is, come on, guys, get real.
You
he
bet,
did not
Paul.
Do this on his own.
You bet, and I appreciate the call, and this is a nation of laws and not people, and everybody should be reminded of that. With impeachment, if necessary, John Nichols joins us in the next hour to talk about the genius of impeachment right here on Air America Radio.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
1320 KCTC. Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
The former dictator of Iraq awaits his fate.
The end for Saddam Hussein could come any day now.
And what will be the future strategy for Iraq? We don't know yet.
We're making good progress toward coming up with a plan that we think will help us achieve our objective.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. Saddam Hussein still awaits execution. The Bush administration said to be preparing for the possibility the execution will occur as early as this weekend. A U.S. military officer tells CBS News Saddam will be turned over to the Iraqis within the next 36 hours. After that, it's anyone's guess. Here's CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
It may even be possible that the United States forces will not even be privy to the exact timing of the actual execution, though certainly they'll know it will happen in a few hours once the transfer of custody occurs.
CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston in Baghdad tells us the execution will be videotaped and documented in other ways.
There will be witnesses. Iraqis will be there, members of the coalition, presumably, of course, U.S. officials, and some international observers. Again, because of the secrecy surrounding the exact date of the execution. We're not being told who these witnesses will be.
Security will be very tight for the execution, but U.S. troops may not be as visible. They may instead pull back to act as quick reaction forces if needed, much as they do during elections in Iraq. President Bush and his advisors are huddled at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, coming up with a new strategy on Iraq, but he wants more time. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller is there.
After 3 hours of talks with his top national security advisors, President Bush said they're making good progress on drafting a new strategy for Iraq, but there'll be no change in his principal objective, victory.
It's important for the American people to understand. Success in Iraq is vital for our own security. If we were to not succeed in Iraq, the enemy, the extremists, the radicals, would have safe haven from which to launch further attacks.
Much to the dismay of some in Congress, one option Mr. Bush is considering calls for sending more troops to Iraq. He still plans to unveil the new strategy next month. Mark Noller, CBS News, with the president in Crawford, Texas.
Now this.
Hello, I'm George. Every year about this time, my wife gets concerned about my rowdy and crazy behavior. I can't help it. Happy Honda Days gets me all giggly and rambunctious. Hurry to your Honda dealer today and get an awesome deal on the 8-passenger Pilot, the ultra-functional Element, or the innovative Ridgeline. Yeah, baby. Happy Honda Days. It's going off, dude. Seriously.
Okay, team, let's get started.
Now exiting for Hazelnut Serenity.
Introducing Splenda flavor blends for coffee and hazelnut, French vanilla, and mocha. They add delicious flavor that takes you someplace else.
Ah, a yoga retreat with no pie charts. Assume the lotus position and sip. Breathe in tantalizing hazelnut.
Oh, Margo?
What? Yeah, it's totally zen.
New Splenda flavor blends for coffee. Visit them at hazelnutflavorblends.com. Find them in the coffee aisle.
Some financial markets will be closed Tuesday to mark the funeral of former President Gerald Ford.
This is John Hartshee in Washington. President Bush has designated Tuesday, January 2nd, as the National Day of Mourning in honor and tribute to the memory of Gerald Ford. Mr. Bush will be back in the Capitol from his Texas holiday and will speak at the funeral service at the National Cathedral that day. His order declares that all executive departments and other government agencies be closed on Tuesday as a mark of respect for President Ford.
The storm's not even there yet, but Denver authorities are already canceling flights. Air passengers rushed to the airport early to avoid a repeat of last week when thousands of people were stranded. Chuck Cannon is an airport spokesman.
People are getting here well in advance of the storm. They want to make sure that they have plenty of time. And so the lines, some of the airline check-in lines are probably 2 and 3 hours long.
And the frustration level was high.
Here 4 hours early. I have a ticket. I should be able to get in the line and get on my plane. These people, they don't know what they're doing.
The Denver area could get 18 inches of snow, and already 180 flights have been canceled. The airport has brought in additional cots and blankets. 4,700 travelers were stranded at the airport for 2 days last week. In New Orleans, a grand jury has indicted 7 police officers in the shooting deaths of 2 young men 6 days after Hurricane Katrina. They were shot on a bridge in the chaos after the storm. The circumstances were always unclear. 4 of the officers have been charged with first-degree murder and 3 others with attempted murder. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Coffee?
Thanks.
AM 13.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
from our studios in New York City. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Welcome 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow this week. We'll return next week after the new year in 2007, which can't be any worse than 2006. As Air America News reported at the top of the hour, it seems that Saddam Hussein could be executed as early as this weekend. That's good. It'll get rid of the evidence for this country. After all, where did he get all those weapons of mass destruction to begin with? I think we knew he had them long, long time ago because we still had the receipts. It's also mentioned this that Saddam Hussein's last hours and possibly his execution itself will be videotaped, so we can expect that on YouTube in the next week or two, right next to Chad Vader in Lonely Girl 15, will be the ultimate lesson that America is trying to teach the world that killing people is wrong, and of course they'll teach that lesson by killing somebody. As heinous as a person as it is, it does not teach any moral lesson. So I figure today, as we look at people power celebrating the third day of Kwanzaa Ujima, collective work and responsibility, we would take a look at how we can end this godforsaken, unjustifiable war in Iraq and restore a good name to the U.S. Of course, our president always says, hey, I listen to the troops on the ground. I thought tonight maybe we could listen to the troops on the ground and see what they had to say. For instance, Major William Voorhees, the American commander of a military training unit in Baghdad, who told the New York Times today, I have come to the conclusion, says Major Voorhees, I have come to the conclusion that this is no longer America's war in Iraq, but the Iraq Civil War where America is fighting. The reporter for the Times took a two-day trip accompanying Major Voorhees' unit and combat troops, and his experience seemed to back Major Voorhees' statement, as did other commanding officers expressing similar frustrations, albeit off the record. So as we listen to the troops on the ground, what do we hear? This is a civil war that we are in the middle of. Let's not stop there, though. Chicago Tribune today, or Chicago Sometimes, excuse me, at sometimes.com, Steve Henderson has done two full tours of duty as an Army sergeant in Afghanistan. He was given an honorable discharge just 20 months ago. He has been recalled 2 weeks before Christmas. Orders for him were sent for him to report to Fort Benning by January 14th. He is required to fight in Iraq for a period not to exceed 545 days, or in other words, an eternity. Stephen Henderson, a Chicago native, will not return and will not serve his country. He says he's already completed 4 years of active duty, including 17 months in operations all over Afghanistan. He refuses to go back. There's no reason to fight. There's no reason to die. Just ask Major Voorhees. And then there is a story, and thanks to Talking Points Memo for pointing this one out in the New York Sun, perhaps even our new Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, one of the original members of the Iraq Study Group, the Baker-Hamilton Commission, is wary of putting more troops on the ground. From the New York Sun, Robert Gates met with President Bush Saturday at Camp David, or as we like to call it, the Condoleezza Rice Rendezvous. After a trip to Iraq, where the Defense Secretary met with the commander of American forces there, General George Casey, the New York Sun is reporting with President Bush leaning towards sending more soldiers to pacify Iraq. The Defense Secretary, Robert Gates, is privately opposing the buildup. This according to two separate unnamed administration officials. Robert Gates had been a member of the 10-person Iraq Study Group, which is calling for a troop reduction and elimination in Iraq by 2008, increasing troops who can train Iraqis. That's what's going on the ground. Can we stop it? Listen, if we put our minds to it, we can do anything. If it needs be, we can make sure that our Democratic representatives, our Democratic senators, stop funding this war. Heck, the money's not going for body armor anyway. It's not going for drinkable water anyway. It's not going to our troops' health care anyway. Let me read something from you. This is worthwhile. Let's play a quiz show. Guess the administration. You ready? Guess the administration. This administration has run America's defenses down over the decade through inadequate resources, promiscuous commitments, and the absence of a forward-looking military strategy. This administration's diplomacy undermined American alliances, alienated friends, and emboldened our adversaries. This administration's problems with Mexico have been ignored as our indispensable neighbor to the south struggled with too little American help to help deal with its challenges. With weak and wavering policies toward Russia, this administration has diverted its gaze from corruption at the very top of the Russian government, the slaughter of thousands of innocent Chechens, and the export of dangerous Russian technology and weapons to Iran and elsewhere. This administration has failed to slow a proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, like, you know, North Korea. Which administration are we talking about there? Well, if you want to believe the 2000 Republican foreign policy platform, we're talking about the Clinton foreign policy. But I just got a call from the pot, and it's calling the kettle black here, because if this doesn't ring true today as much as it ever did, I don't know what does. This would be a stunning indictment by the Republicans' own foreign policy platform in the 2000 election. An indictment by their own accord that they have failed. By running down America's defenses, by undermining our alliances around the world, by not dealing with the issues of Mexico and Mexicans who need our help, not our just kicking them out of our country, by looking the other way while Russia decided that it could play dictator instead of democracy, and by looking the other way while North Korea became nuclear and Iran did the same. And yet, those were the arguments of the Republican foreign policy platform in the 2000 election. How far we've come. I've got John Nichols coming up at the bottom of the hour. He is editor for our local newspaper here in Madison, Wisconsin, the Capital Times. Also writer for TheNation.com, and he has a new book called The Genius of Impeachment. The Genius of Impeachment, The Founder's Cure for Royalism. And I have to, with everything that I have read and seen in the most unpartisan way I can think, believe that there are impeachable offenses that we need to deal with, that investigations need to take place from the people-powered 110th Congress, and we need to do the work to get the job done and right the ship. Last night, I brought you my favorite Republican, Gary Miller from California, who was busy lopping the tops off of hillsides in order to threaten to build at least huge new multimillion-dollar neighborhoods with multimillion-dollar homes. Of course, these so far for Representative Gary Miller and California Republican representative have been idle threats as cities have swooped in to save the day and save their hillsides, in one case saving a natural waterfall by buying out Representative Gary Miller, making sure that man, who is also his own representative of the properties he's bought, a pure profit on the land sales and mere threats to make it an eyesore. That was last night's favorite Republican. Coming up next, I want to look in our own backyard. And the reason we bring it up is because we celebrate Ujima tonight, the collective work and responsibility, because we believe in people power. And I want to show what people power can do. I mentioned earlier in the week that our Air America affiliate here in Madison, Wisconsin, has one of the smallest antennas in the city. And we compensate for it by driving red sports cars. Nevertheless, we have our voice being heard around the state, and we are the only Air America affiliate in the state. People stream us online at airamerica.com. People stream us at our website, themike921.com here in Madison. And we got the word out about some Republicans that you need to know. And coming up next, I have a special guest, hopefully, who can join us, my old co-host here on the morning show on Madison's Air America affiliate, to talk about my favorite Wisconsin Republican tonight. You've never heard of him, but once you hear him, you will realize how scary these people are. Truly scary, if not downright insane. That's a story that will be told next, along with John Nichols, who joins us at the bottom of the hour. Don't miss it. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for the one and the only Rachel Maddow, who returns in the new year on The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Do you have a question for Rachel Maddow? Call us at 212-871-8173 or email us from maddowonline.com. Air America Radio.
That unfamiliar sound is...
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels. Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show. At 20 minutes after the hour, my name is Lee Rayburn, broadcasting from Madison, Wisconsin this evening, filling in for Rachel Maddow this week. And I want to thank her and everybody back at the Air America Studios for giving me this great opportunity, this more than likely once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And it would be a waste if I didn't share what I knew with you here in the Great Heartland. We had, much like at the national level in the federal government, we had an overturning of our state legislature this year as the state Senate in Wisconsin went from Republican control to an upcoming Democratic control where our state new state Senate majority leader will be making our health care a priority, which speaks directly to me. Last night I told you about my favorite Republican, Representative Gary Miller from California. Tonight I want to tell you about one in my own backyard. One of the B-teamers, you know, one of the up-and-comers of the Republican Party, one of the people that was going to do something great. Of course, until he lost his election in November, something that really nobody expected here in Wisconsin, because he represented one of the most Republican areas in the state, which is in western Milwaukee suburb. My favorite Wisconsin Republican that I want to share with you tonight is former state senator Tom Reynolds. Never heard of him, but you will hear him here. And I want to warn you, the first clip I'm going to play from him that I have for you this evening, a little bit edgy, a little bit uncomfortable, absolutely uncomfortable, unquestionably uncomfortable. You're not going to want to hear it. Nevertheless, this is a macaca moment that makes macaca look foolish. And I want to play it for you here. If you have children in your car or you are sensitive to such language, you may want to turn down your radio just for 30 seconds and then rejoin us, because the rest of what he said, equally stupid, but not quite as offensive. This is my favorite Wisconsin Republican, state senator, former state senator, Tom Reynolds.
You read the Constitution, it says people have unalienable rights guaranteed to them by God. You know, I believe rights are given to us by God. I have a God-given right to raise my child as I see fit without the government coming in and telling me what I can do. I mean, we actually use a little physical discipline on our children. I, with my boy, occasionally he will get a spanking for willfully disobeying, you know, what the rules we have laid down. He's not supposed to stick his finger up his sister's butt.
What?
Stick his finger in there. He's not supposed to. If he does that, he will be penalized by getting a stink.
Sounds similar to teaching people that killing people is wrong by killing people. That's my former state senator of the Waukesha area west of Milwaukee, Tom Reynolds, speaking to a public hearing. Interesting enough, this is a man who took his family on a nature walk up in Door County in northern Wisconsin and was stunned to find that there were areas that his family was not allowed to walk. And according to members of his own staff, when he returned to the state capitol here in Madison, Wisconsin, he told his staffers to go up and take down the sign that told him he could not walk on pristine nature preserves. This is a man who, when arrested for speeding on the interstate between Madison and Milwaukee, actually proposed a bill which would eliminate the speed limit, and then he proposed a bill that would create a privatized autobahn for the rich between Milwaukee and Madison. And then when that didn't fly, he proposed a law that would allow people to speed as long as other people were speeding near them. This is a man who sent his interns out to go, his state senate staff interns out to go try to figure out and count how many undocumented workers were in the state of Wisconsin. This is a man who sent his staff to go find out whether or not the elderly were being killed in our hospitals through euthanasia. This was a man that in his next town hall, as you might be able to imagine, was a little more sketchy about people recording him for reasons that should be obvious by now.
Sir, you're filming here from where?
Personal interest.
All right.
This was a town hall meeting for State Senator Tom Reynolds here in Wisconsin that was held in a library, a public building, with a public figure that he refused to allow to be recorded, violating... Well, basically our constitutional right for oversight. After his major macaca moment, he didn't want to be anybody to pay attention to him anymore. And even during the election this past November, our state senator, my favorite Wisconsin Republican Tom Reynolds, wouldn't even attend the debates with his Democratic challenger, the new state senator for that district, Jim Sullivan, refused to even go to the debates. He did not want to be filmed. He did not want to be recorded. He did not want his words used against him. It was curious then that part of what we did here on our local show on the Air America affiliate in Madison was offer up equal time to each candidate, something that no other radio station in this city did, no other radio station in the state for all I know. So for every candidate that we interviewed, and we interviewed the Democratic challenger to Tom Reynolds, Jim Sullivan, well, we offered Tom Reynolds equal time. And for some reason or other, he joined our show, and I asked him about immigration, and this is what he had to say.
You know, one of my concerns for this 2006 election is that Wisconsin, there's going to be an effort to mobilize non-citizens, illegal aliens, to get out to vote like we have never seen here in the state.
We have never seen
right,
that in this
right,
state.
Right, right, and this is going to be an election. We are going to see that. So we have been trying to...
Now, where did you hear that? Because that's the first I've heard that. That would be very interesting.
This is sort of my take on this election out here, that you know, when you have non-citizens being told that if they get out there, well, first of all, they don't obey the law to begin with.
Now, there have been no documented cases of voter fraud in the state of Wisconsin throughout, as far as I know, none in this last election. Nevertheless, Tom Reynolds believed that the aliens are voting. The aliens are voting. It gets weirder a little later on in the conversation, and I had him on the air for about 45 minutes. He told me his solution and his support of the death penalty, returning the death penalty in Wisconsin, and what else we could do, including restoring the death penalty in the state of Wisconsin. This one should shock you. It's my favorite Wisconsin Republican, former State Senator Tom Reynolds.
You know, I was even wondering if we could pass a bill in Wisconsin that if these type of demented people would want to have... a death penalty, that we would allow that. I know there was
a voluntary death penalty.
There was a case in Massachusetts recently where there was a guy who was multiple sex murder crimes.
But that's euthanasia, and I know you don't support euthanasia.
No, I don't think there's any similarities between there. But I'm saying that some of these people are so demented in their ability just to...
And there you have my favorite Republican from Wisconsin, State Senator Tom Reynolds. Get to know him. You'll love him.
It's the Randy Rhodes Show.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of truths.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show at 34 minutes after the hour. My name is Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel this week. She will return in the new year, revived and renewed, and I want to thank her for this wonderful opportunity as I'm broadcasting live this evening from Madison, Wisconsin. My next guest, one of the editors of our local paper, the Capital Times, you most likely would know him from The Nation and TheNation.com. John Nichols, whose new book, The Genius of Impeachment, The Founder's Cure for Royalism, sheds light on what we can do as a people to bring justice to our country. Hey, John, thanks for joining me this evening.
It's a great pleasure to be on with you, Lee. And I've done the show with Rachel often, and I've done shows with you, but never this time with a national audience. What a pleasure.
Hey, believe me, it is my pleasure. And if I do this right, it'll be everybody listening's pleasure, because you're clearly just one of the you're one of the great progressive historians and journalists of our time. And I want to start with the announcement today from New Orleans of John Edwards entering into the Democratic presidential fray for 2008. And, you know, his speech that he's been giving for years now about the two Americas really speaks to me, because from my perspective, looking from, you know, my apartment window, that's exactly what I see. Does this man have a chance, even though he's already lost a vice president nomination?
I think he does have a chance. I think Edwards is a fascinating figure. When he ran for the presidency in 2004, really beginning his campaign in 2003, he was a very ill-defined figure. He was good-looking. He was from a southern state. But people really didn't know what to make of him. And frankly, the first stages of his presidential campaign the last time around were bumbling. He had a silly farm policy that didn't appeal to anybody in Iowa. He didn't seem to have much of a message on the war. There was a lot of reasons why he wasn't a very functional candidate. But as the campaign went on, he grew exponentially. He got dramatically better, so that at the end of the day, he was the primary rival to John Kerry for the nomination. And Kerry was forced to accept him somewhat unwillingly as his vice presidential nominee. What's interesting about, yeah, because, well, they thought Edwards was going to be more attractive than Kerry.
Which he may have been.
True. But what was fascinating to me is that after the 2004 race, Edwards continued to grow. He continued to improve as a political figure.
Working for the Southern Poverty Law Center, really, yeah. I mean, that means something.
Well, he did so many things. He developed a real program to address poverty issues, which is at a university in his home state. He traveled to Africa and really examined global poverty issues. He didn't just talk about this. He got deep into it. Additionally, he did something most politicians don't ever do. He acknowledged places where he had been wrong. He wrote an op-ed article for the Washington Post in which he said his vote to authorize Bush to go to war in Iraq was wrong. He wrote another piece and did a number of statements acknowledging that his support for the Patriot Act in the past had been wrongheaded and inappropriate. He's clearly moved to a much more progressive place, and I think, as I said, it's grown. Where he stands today is as the progressive alternative to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton is by any means a conservative Democrat. She's pro-business on most things, pro-war, not a particularly exciting figure. Barack Obama is a more interesting mix. He was critical of the war from the start. That makes him very positive. Some of his votes on business issues have been very disappointing. And so he's a sort of a grayer character, one who's a little ill-defined. But Edwards, I think, will compete in this race as the clear progressive contender. And I think he's going to attract a lot of support. He already has, in Iowa, got a real base of support. Additionally, what fascinated me today was a number of very powerful members of Congress came out and endorsed him, including Dave Obey, who's the chair of the Appropriations Committee.
And right from our own backyard here in Wisconsin, you call it Candidate Edwards version 2.008 at TheNation.com. And this Edwards, a little more put together than the one we saw, 6 years ago, couple of years ago now. But another man has entered into the fray in the Democratic bid to become the next president of the United States, and that would be our anti-war congressman from Cleveland, our vegetarian representative, Dennis Kucinich. Now, when we talk about chances, if you're a betting man in Vegas, you probably wouldn't lay your money on this man.
No, I've always respected Dennis for a variety of reasons. He was the mayor of Cleveland back in the late 1970s, at a time when corporate power was really on the march in the U.S., trying to take over all the local utilities. He brought them back there, got driven out of office by the big banks and Wall Street, fought his way back into politics, got himself elected to Congress, and since he's been in Congress, has been the real champion of the anti-war position on not just this war, but other battles around the world, as well as a kind of 100% voter on a host of progressive issues. He's a good guy. Unfortunately, there's a lot of reasons to believe that he doesn't translate as well to the national political stage as some other figures. His race in 2004 attracted a lot of support from thinking and serious players around the country, but didn't really reach the great mass of voters. He got about 70 delegates to the convention in 2004. I think that his entry into the race this time is important for one reason. He will be there as a candidate absolutely stating the clear anti-war position, the position that it is time to bring the troops home now. The effect of that in the debates is going to be a very good one, because no matter who's running, it's good to have someone in those debates saying, no, it is. You don't have to compromise. You don't have to have a long timeline. It is possible to do a rapid and orderly withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq, and indeed that's what should happen. And I think if Kucinich wasn't running, the issue might not be addressed nearly so well. So I'm glad he's in the race.
Well, Senator Edwards,
I do think it's going to be a tough one.
Senator Edwards from New Orleans today, John, said that he was calling for immediate withdrawal of 50,000 troops with a continued phase-out until we were out of Iraq. So maybe it's not quite the issue for the Democratic Party or the dividing issue for the Democratic Party as it was just a couple of years ago.
I think it still is. I think it's still a real tough issue for the party. Hillary Clinton is not for any kind of serious timeline. Barack Obama is for something of a timeline. Edwards has positioned himself as a more clear supporter of a timeline. But again, the answer on Iraq is not a long timeline. The answer on Iraq is a declaration today that the troops are coming home and that in an orderly and responsible way, we're going to extract them from a country where they do not belong. And so I still don't think that the other candidates are really where they need to be. And again, that leads me to the view that the Kucinich candidacy is one that ought to be celebrated for that. I mean, he probably isn't going to be the nominee. He probably isn't even going to have a lot of delegates to the convention.
There's talk about
it's good to have him there.
There's talk about Hillary, Senator Clinton being the first female president, Senator Barack Obama being the first black president, or even the first president in a long time who smokes. But then again, there's Dennis Kucinich, who would be our first vegetarian president. Do you think we'll get last?
Dennis would be different in a lot of ways. Another way that he'd be very different is he is the only candidate who is going to be running who's going to seriously say that we should cut the Defense Department budget, that instead of, you know, we have so many Democrats now who've lost sight of the reality that when we pour $200 million a day into a war in Iraq, that's $200 million that comes out of funding for education, healthcare, housing, all the other challenges at home. Dwight Eisenhower understood that. Back in the 1950s, he said that every dollar spent for military preparedness is a dollar that comes out of addressing the real challenges, the real problems at home. Now, unfortunately, most Democrats do not have the vision, do not have the wisdom that the commander of our military forces in World War II had.
You can call it vision and wisdom.
Yeah.
You can call it, I call it guts.
Yeah, it is guts. It's courage. And so I want to have a presidential race in 2008 that is about two things, really. One, extracting us from Iraq, and hopefully in so doing, shifting our approach to foreign policy and military spending. That's one side. And the other side is I want a real reassertion of the goals of economic and social justice here at home. And I think Edwards is very, very good on that reassertion of economic and social justice at home, and he's pretty good on the war. And I think that's why, to me at this point, when I look at all of the candidates, of the sort of first-tier candidates, which I guess Edwards is sort of just about there, if not there, he seems to be the most attractive at this point.
John Nichols is my guest. He's the author of the amazing new book, The Genius of Impeachment, The Founder's Cure for Royalism, found anywhere books are sold. You can also find him online at thenation.com. Want to spend some time talking about impeachment this evening? Hey, it's our Congress. It's our Senate. It's our House. Why not use it at this point and seek a little punishment for the crimes that have been reaped upon all of us? We will continue the conversation with John Nichols next here on The Rachel Maddow Show. My name is Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel this week on Air America Radio.
You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show.
What are you people? On dope?
On Air America Radio.
AM 1320, Sacramento.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes region, for folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonia nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
New rule. Jewish people have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail. Do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow, this guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen.
But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show at 48 minutes after the hour. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel this week. She returns next week in the new year. My guest this evening is the author of the new book, The Genius of Impeachment, The Founder's Cure for Royalism. John Nichols joins me. And, John, your book has received praise from Gore Vidal to Studs Terkel, Howard Zinn, Rolling Stone Magazine, Mother Jones, because it's breakthrough, it's revolutionary, and that's because it goes back and looks at the history of impeachment. I used to think, before The Genius of Impeachment, I thought impeachment was a case of last resort. It's the most extreme thing you could do. But you make an argument that our forefathers believed that impeachment, indeed, was just something that should regularly happen when we saw corruption, as in the case of, oh, I don't know, the last 6 years.
That's exactly right, Lee. In fact, one of the things I set out to do with the book is to suggest that the biggest challenge today is not convincing people that George Bush and Dick Cheney should be impeached. There is simply no question. They have committed high crimes and misdemeanors. By any standard that has been established throughout the history of this country, both men should be impeached. Jefferson, Madison, the others would have favored it. The challenge is one of imagination. Most Americans do not think of impeachment as a tool to be used not merely to remove an errant executive, somebody who's misbehaved in office, but also as a tool to change policies. The founders intended impeachment as a political tool. They believed that if you had a president who was leading the country in the wrong direction, specifically into war, which Madison spoke of as the most dangerous and greatest threat to liberty, if you had a president who was leading the country in a wrong direction, you want to rush, not, you know, whine and complain and get cautious about it. You ought to rush to impeach that president. Remove that president from office. Use the tool midterm, because the American people should not have to wait until the next election to change bad policies. The best line about impeachment probably came from Jefferson, who said that we did not fight the revolution to establish a king for 4 years, or, as he referred to, an elective despot. What he worried about most was that someone would be elected president and then pull all sorts of powers into the executive branch, use those powers to launch a war of whim or to spy on the American people, to do something that was totally in conflict with the Constitution, and the people would have to wait till the next election to deal with that. That was not what the founders wanted.
Is it me, or does Jefferson look like he's got Nostradamus-like powers of seeing the future? Because that's you just described the world we live in today, the country we're living in today, the administration we're living under right now.
I have to tell you, in writing this book, it was an absolutely fascinating experience, because I would go back. I read all of Madison's notes from the writing of the Constitution, George Mason's notes, as well as the letters that Jefferson and Madison wrote back and forth to one another during those early years of the Republic. And they constantly came back to their greatest fear, which was that you would have a president who would abuse the office, particularly in a time of war, and particularly in a way that threatened domestic liberties. And, I mean, they spoke almost directly to this moment. In fact, I would argue, and I do argue in the book, that the designing of the power of impeachment as it was done back in 1787 was intended for a moment such as the one we live in. It's notable that, for instance, they were very general, very broad in the crimes that they thought could be included. They said high crimes or misdemeanors. Right? They wanted you to know that it could be just about anything.
Petty theft would be an impeachable offense.
What?
Petty theft would be an impeachable offense.
So, too, is leading the country into a war that is unnecessary.
It's a little more than petty theft there.
Well, you see, that's the thing. And the founders, if you read the intents of the founders, they wanted it to be very broadly defined, because they feared exactly what has happened, unfortunately. They feared that the political class of some future era would say, oh, no, impeachment is a legal tool. It should only be used when a president has committed a classic crime, you know, theft in office or something like that. And maybe, to be honest, I think you got Cheney on that one anyway with the caliber stuff. But they didn't want that to happen. They wanted to make sure that the American people knew that impeachment could be used not merely to sanction crimes in the classic sense, but also to sanction policies that were dangerous to the country. Why? Why in heaven's name would you only remove someone if, say, like Spiro Agnew, you took a small bribe?
Yeah.
I mean, and not remove someone if they led the country into an illegal and immoral war that was killing thousands of our sons and daughters.
John Nichols is my guest. He's the author of the great book, The Genius of Impeachment, The Founder's Cure for Royalism, out now. And, John, I have to ask you then, where's the disconnect between our forefathers and our political leaders of today, where once they saw impeachment as a necessary procedure in specific for times exactly such as these, how come today we argue that it's a case of last resort? Does Gerald Ford's pardoning of Richard Nixon have something to do with the disconnect we live through today?
I wouldn't really blame Ford for it. I mean, I think that the pardon of Nixon was certainly unfortunate. We should have seen that impeachment through to its final stages, because we needed it much more than quote-unquote healing. We needed to put controls back on the executive branch. The tragic reality is that the failure to restore those constraints on the executive branch have resulted in us entering into a number of unnecessary and illegal wars. And, in fact, we are in one of them now. So the failure to impeach at an appropriate time always comes back to haunt you. But I really think the problem today is a twofold one. We have a political class that doesn't like impeachment because they don't believe in what Jefferson believed in. Jefferson believed that government should fear the people, that it shouldn't be the other way around, right?
I believe
people
that.
People shouldn't fear their government. Government should fear the people. They don't like that concept, and impeachment is deeply rooted in that theory. The other thing is that we have a press, a media today, that is by and large a part of the Washington elite, a part of the Washington consensus. So they, too, fear impeachment as something that sort of upsets the balance that they're used to. Now, the absurdity of this is that there's no better story than impeachment. And so we have a media that actually chooses to side with the political class rather than the good news story.
John Nichols, let me ask you then, if the powers that be are afraid of impeachment, what can the people do to make sure that their will is heard and that those that, no matter what their office, that commit crimes against this nation, crimes against the people around the world, are held and accountable and brought to justice?
Jefferson, Madison, George Mason, all of the founders intended that impeachment would be an organic process, that in a time when an executive was out of control or acting illegally, there would be investigations. Those investigations, hopefully conducted by opposition figures in Congress, would become a part of the national discussion, hopefully via the media, but through all sorts of other vehicles as well, and even maybe Air America Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, as people became more and more aware of the high crimes and misdemeanors of an executive, they would demand that their Congress act. I actually think we're in a very appropriate and very very pure impeachment moment right now. We have a new Congress coming into office. We have many members of this Congress, such as Henry Waxman, the new chair of the House Government Reform Committee, and Russ Feingold, the new chair of the Constitution Subcommittee, who say they want to investigate this administration's actions with regard to the war, with regard to war profiteering, with regard to warrantless wiretapping. As they do so, and if they do so effectively, I think the American people are going to become more and more aware of the genuine threat that is posed by allowing George Bush and Dick Cheney to continue this presidency. And when they are, they have a very simple responsibility. It is the responsibility that Jefferson intended when he said that all power should rest in the people. That responsibility is to demand that their representatives in Congress represent the will of the people, which is to change course, to remove these officials from office, and to make it clear that the presidency can never lead us in this direction again.
John Nichols, the author of The Genius of Impeachment, The Founder's Cure for Royalism, thank you so much for your time tonight and telling us what we can do to make justice happen for us, the people. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Rachel Maddow. I'll join you again tomorrow night. See John Nichols online at thenation.com. See you tomorrow night on The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left-handed listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. CBS News has learned Saddam Hussein may be turned over to Iraqi authorities in Baghdad within 36 hours. And the Bush administration apparently believes the former dictator will be executed before the weekend is out. Here's CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
He is kept in a facility there at Camp Cropper. I know that's a U.S. facility. The execution site, which the Iraqis have used for other criminals and the like, is in the same area and not far away. But at some point in time, he'll be physically handed over from U.S. guardianship to Iraqi guards.
CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston talked to a high-ranking Iraqi official today about security surrounding the execution.
The National Security Advisor said that the Iraqi government has been working in close concert with the U.S. government in terms of working out the details. But he also made clear that this is an Iraqi process, that the execution will be carried out on the Iraqi timetable. But he did say that the U.S. would be called on for possible logistical assistance and, of course, security assistance.
Saddam met today at his prison with his two half-brothers to say goodbye. President Bush has been meeting at his Texas ranch with his advisors to come up with a new Iraq policy. He says they need more time. He's not expected to announce the strategy until after the new year. There's another winter storm causing headaches in Colorado.
We love Denver. We just don't like blizzards.
Already dozens of flights have been canceled, and Denver still digging out from last week's blizzard. Mayor John Hickenlooper says city crews are working as hard as they can.
These guys have been out there. Many of these guys have been working 12 hours on, 12 hours off at the wheel of heavy equipment without rest. A lot of them have worked, at this point we're talking 84 hours in 6 days. That is Herculean.
18 inches of new snow could fall on the city overnight. The North Carolina bar has filed ethics charges against Durham County DA Mike Nifong over his handling of the Duke LaCrosse rape case. This after the rape charges were dropped, but kidnapping and sexual offense allegations remain. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen on how this may affect the outcome.
This does put pressure on Michael Nifong to get out of the case, to recuse himself, to somehow basically give up the case. Technically, that would not end the case. Another prosecutor could take it up, but it's hard to imagine another prosecutor putting their necks on the line to get involved in this controversial case.
Godfather of Soul returned to the stage at the Apollo Theater today, and thousands of James Brown fans filed past his gold coffin.
It was great. He had a blue suit on, silver shoes. They had the James Brown music playing in the background. It was fantastic. We danced down the aisle.
Legendary R&B artist died on Christmas morning at the age of 73. On Wall Street today, the Dow finished off 9 points. The Nasdaq was lower by 5. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Kenny Mayne. Safe, good drivers like Vern here, who switched to Progressive Direct last year, saved hundreds of dollars. So, Vern, what did you do with the savings?
I made my car even safer.
How?
Linked a PA system to my blinker here and...
I blend on turning left. I blend on turning left.
Okay, good times. Progressive rewards good drivers with great savings. You can use those savings to do things like Vern here. Or not. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE today.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations. Rates and potential savings will vary.
Coffee?
Thanks.
Introducing Splenda, flavor blends for coffee and French vanilla, mocha, and hazelnut. They add delicious flavor that takes you someplace else.
Mmm. I'm ready for takeoff. Ah, smell that luscious vanilla air. Wow, I'm good. I could do this on one ski. I am on one ski. Shimmering vanilla moguls beckon. It's the gold medal.
Miss, please, sit down. The captain has turned on the seatbelt sign.
Oh, sure. Right.
New Splenda, flavor blends for coffee. Visit them at vanillaflavorblends.com. Find them in the coffee aisle.
Financial markets will be closed and a national day of mourning declared Tuesday in honor of former President Gerald Ford. There will be a service at the National Cathedral that day. The state funeral will take place Saturday, but things begin in California.
This is Steve Futterman in Palm Desert. Rehearsals are taking place here today in preparation for tomorrow's church ceremonies honoring Mr. Ford. At the church, where the Fords have worshipped for many years, military honor guards have been marching in the parking lot, practicing their formations. Inside the church, a military band has been rehearsing Hail to the Chief. The six-day salute, which will begin here in California, will also go through Washington and end in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Mr. Ford's hometown.
The government says domestic violence rates are dropping sharply, in fact. What's known as intimate partner violence, down more than 50% from 1993 to 2004. Experts say they aren't clear why. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Hello, I'm George. Every year about this time.
Available with better than average credit score.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
You are listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guests tonight are Emilio Estevez and Harry Belafonte.
I will live like a free man.
Hello and welcome to the program. Well, all this week we've been talking about the life and legacy of Robert F. Kennedy. If you've heard this program over the last few days, you already know that this is a very personal and emotional story for me. In 1968, I was a 12-year-old volunteer on Robert Kennedy's presidential campaign, and I was at the Ambassador Hotel on that horrible night when he was killed. In the years since then, it's been very difficult for me to even look at the footage from that night. You know, the funny thing is that I didn't cry when it happened. I certainly remember adults sobbing uncontrollably and falling to the ground or walking out of the hotel like zombies. But maybe because I was so young, I was detached from it. I watched everything that unfolded that night almost as if it was a movie. And it wasn't until over a month later, I was looking at photos from the campaign, that I finally did break down and let it all out, all that bottled up emotion. I just started shaking and sobbing. So when I heard that Emilio Estevez was making a film about that night, I confess that I had some mixed feelings. Part of me didn't want to ever go there again, even on film. But another part of me wanted to try and remember and understand that night as an adult, as someone who's now, in fact, older than Robert Kennedy was when he died. I saw the film last week, and here's what I need to tell you. Emilio Estevez has created a movie that will deeply touch the hearts and minds of everyone, not just people who love Robert Kennedy. It's not a political film. It's an intensely human story. Actually, it's a series of stories about people's lives as they come together on one night in time, a night that also happened to change our history forever. It's an extraordinary film and a remarkable achievement, and I'm delighted to welcome to the program the man whose vision and incredible determination brought Bobby to the screen. Emilio Estevez, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It's truly my pleasure to be here. I'm a fan of the show, and thank you for that moving opening. That was very stirring, man.
Well, and thank you for making the film. And I got to tell you, everything I just said, it too has been bottled up, because I really was... This is an emotional time for a lot of people. Now, I've had people on this week. I've had Paul Schrade on. I just had Theodore Sorensen, Ted Sorensen. You know, what you've done here, Neo, is to, for those of us, now this again is the narrow casting of it. For those of us who work for Robert Kennedy, love Robert Kennedy, and many people who knew him well, you've brought him back in a way. You've gone out and you've done something amazing here because you went and got this footage, some of which hasn't been seen since it happened.
Right.
And digitized it and put it up on the screen. And you made a choice not to cast an actor.
That's right.
Robert Kennedy.
That's
so
right.
Had that always been your thought from the beginning that you were going to do it this way?
Absolutely. How do you cast an actor to play this extraordinary individual.
Well, your father did it, as a matter of fact.
And he did it great.
He was great.
You know what's interesting about his performance? And you know, I watched him. I was 11 years old in 1973 when he was prepping to do that role. And I watched him do the physical things, for instance, taping his ears down, and he added some two front teeth as a prosthetic, and getting the part in his hair the right way. And I listened to him as he practiced the speeches of Bobby Kennedy. He would do the needle drop, and then he'd lift it, and he'd repeat it. And he'd do the needle drop later on in the speech, and he'd repeat it. And so I was fascinated by his preparation.
And the answer is you could have found, you couldn't have found someone as good as your father, but you could have found an actor who might have tried this. Others have done it. But
well,
you...
sure. Now, Stephen Culp in 13 Days, I thought, gave an uncanny performance.
He did.
But my father was devastated by one review from Missiles of October, and it was from Ted Kennedy, who he wanted to impress more than anyone, of course.
Sure.
And Ted Kennedy gave the review. He says, I thought Martin Sheen's performance was a bit strident. And I remember, I think I was 12 when the show aired. And I remember being devastated for my father because I know that, you know, how deeply affected he was by that review. And, you know, you always remember the bad ones.
Yeah, you always remember the bad ones, which is why they tell you to read neither the bad ones nor the good ones.
Right, indeed.
And ignore them all. Well, your father, and let's share this with people, your father knew Robert Kennedy, had worked for him. You're younger than I am. You're 44. You were 5 years old, I think, when you met and shook Robert Kennedy's hand. You don't remember that, though, right?
It lives in my memory as told. He was joining Mayor Lindsay in New York at a policeman's rally right down the block from where we lived. And my father took me with him, and I was sitting on his shoulders, and Bobby reached out and shook my hand. And I, you know, unfortunately, there's no photo of it, but it lives in, as I said, in my memory.
Well, if it was like the photo of Bill Clinton meeting John Kennedy, you'd be running for president now. But a year later, at 6 years old, on that night, you do remember that you were visiting your grandparents in Ohio.
That's right.
And talk about that. What do you remember about that night?
Well, I remember it was actually the next morning, and we had gone to bed after the it looked pretty certain that he had won.
Sure, and it was
and,
late there. It
was late
3 in the morning.
On the East Coast, sure. So it was the next morning. My grandmother had the television on, and the news was just devastating, and she was crying. And I remember running upstairs and waking up both of my parents and telling my father they shot Bobby, and how he wept. And I remember how he spent a good part of the day on the phone with his best friend who was outside of Good Samaritan Hospital, and he was getting the updates hourly.
I was sitting on that hillside outside of Good Samaritan Hospital myself, and I remember that so well because we sat there for almost 24 hours,
right.
You know,
until
waiting.
Mankiewicz came out.
That's right, waiting to see if he would live or die. And in fact, people don't remember that, you know, it didn't happen instantly.
Right.
He survived for a day and a night.
Right, about 26 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Again, this is the personal. I want to take it, as I said at the beginning, this is a film that people who did not know Robert Kennedy, and many, you know, so many young people who don't remember him contemporaneously,
sure.
are going to be so moved by, and I want to talk.
I
want to talk about why, because I really want people to go and see this. So the key to this for me is that you didn't, again, make a political film. You made human story.
That's
a lot
right.
of them. So let's talk about this. This cast is, you know, Orson Welles couldn't get this group of people together. So how the hell did you do it? It's an amazing achievement. You've got Anthony Hopkins and Demi Moore and Lindsay Lohan. I mean, talk about disparate characters.
It's a very eclectic blend of individuals. There's no doubt. And some of the critics have accused me of having naked pictures of all of them. That could have, you know, must have been the only way I could have. Gotten them to participate in the film.
Well, we'll release those on the internet at a later date. But I need to ask you about this process. You worked on, let's back it up a little bit. You started working on this film, and talk about not taking no for an answer.
Right.
You're writing the script. You believe deeply in telling the story. And you weren't getting paid for it. And I've read that you had to, you know, sign autographs.
Well, I wasn't getting paid for anything at this point.
Yeah.
And this was back in 2000. And I was really having to take a look at where my career was going because it was going nowhere. And the phone truly, I mean, you hear about the phone stop, you know, it stops ringing. Well, it actually happens.
Yeah, sure.
You stand there and you look at it for hours on end, and you're thinking,
and that
well,
never
someone's
works.
Got a call.
That never works.
Exactly. And you're thinking, well, someone's got to want me to do something here at some point. And it really became a matter of okay, now what? Now how do I steel myself for this next level and the next phase of my life and career? And you know, I think I probably did what a lot of actors, unemployed actors, do, and you start writing. You start writing a screenplay. Los Angeles is probably, I don't know how many actors there are, probably easily over 100,000. And I would hazard a guess and say that there, you know, 20,000 of them have probably done just that.
And all of them really want to direct.
Of course. Of course they do. And so I was at a photo shoot at the Ambassador Hotel. And in between setups, they asked if I wanted a tour, and I said, of course. And so we walked downstairs, and we walked through the kitchen, and I felt my heart starting to beat. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, we're going into the pantry.
Yeah.
And the pantry was behind these padlocked doors, and they opened them up for us. And you stand there in what I believe is hallowed ground, and I was overwhelmed with emotion. And I went back to 1968. I remembered that morning. And then I remembered something that I'd completely forgotten about, and that was in 1969, when we relocated from New York to Los Angeles, the Ambassador Hotel was the first place we stopped.
Oh, is that
before
right?
We even got an apartment of our own.
Hmm.
My father wanted me to see it. He wanted all of us to see it.
Hmm.
And I remember walking through the lobby, holding his hand, and listening to him talk about, this is the place, this is where it happened, here's where the music died. And so that left an enormous impact on me. And I began to think about, well, you know, why hasn't anybody done this story? Why hasn't anybody told this story? Because it certainly had an impact on my life. And then I began to do the research. And most of the research materials that I had to call through existed on microfiche. So
sure.
It was a matter of going down to the Los Angeles Public Library and putting on the spools and literally doing it a page at a time. And that's where I discovered about the first time the IBM had implemented the electronic voting machines, about the Don Drysdale shutout, that Andy Warhol had been shot on Monday.
There's so much I need to talk to you about. We need to take a quick break.
Sure.
And if you can stay with us.
Of course.
We're talking with Emilio Estevez, who is the director, writer, and one of the stars of the film Bobby. It opens today nationwide. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Stop Mad Cowboy.
about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Halls Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
Talking about the life and legacy of Robert Kennedy all this week on Politically Direct, and I'm delighted that the director of the film, Bobby, and its writer and one of its stars, Emilio Estevez, is with us today. What's so stunning to me, you weren't there.
Right.
But you got it. And here's what I remember. I remember that night. There's a backstory in the film about the, you mentioned Don Drysdale, the L.A. Dodgers pitcher.
That's
who
right.
was pitching, he was breaking a record that had been set around the turn of the century. Of
1908, hadn't been broken in 1908.
Consecutive scoreless innings. And all of us, I got to tell you, here I am, it's now 30 years later, I'm remembering that night when I saw this on film. We were all listening to it in the ballroom. We were not listening to the primary. We were listening to Don Drysdale.
Right.
And
right.
You have footage in this film of Robert Kennedy coming to the podium, and I remember him doing it, and congratulating Don Drysdale.
And hope that we have as much luck in our campaign.
Exactly
and
right.
And you know who wrote that line for him?
I don't.
Milton Berle.
Is that right? Milton Berle
wrote
there that
line
night.
For him. He was there.
I got Milton Berle's autograph that night. are you ready? In the kitchen.
Oh, my.
Yeah, until you just said that, I had forgotten it.
And, you know, Pat Paulson was there that night.
Pat Paulson was there.
Earlier.
That is exactly
He was running
right.
for president.
Yes, he was. Pat Paulson, who was an actor on the Smothers Brothers show,
right.
and he started this campaign for president. He was running. There were a lot of celebrities who were there that night. I actually, and, you know, it's interesting, your character, Virginia Fallon, Demi Moore's character in the film, again, these are composites or not real people. Some of them are inspired, I think, by real
they
people.
Are,
certainly,
indeed.
Fred Rodriguez's part, the busboy, who's has
Juan Romero,
right? But there's a lot in the Virginia Fallon character that reminded me of the person I met that night. I got there. My parents dropped me off at the embassy ballroom and left me there. I mean, they were not involved in politics. They couldn't quite fathom what I was doing on this campaign.
at 12 years old.
I dropped out of seventh grade, man. I didn't go to school for 10 weeks to work for Bobby Kennedy. But what happened was is that because I was a kid wandering around in the ballroom that night, this packed ballroom, Rosemary Clooney,
sure.
who had campaigned for Robert Kennedy, had gone around the country and loved Robert Kennedy, was there with two of her kids.
That's right.
And she saw me as this kid alone and took me under her wing.
Oh, my.
And I was with her that entire night until that moment, and that was the last time I ever saw her.
Wow.
She fell to her knees, clutched her kids right at the time that, everything happened. And so I look at your character of Virginia Fallon, who's, you know, very different. But Rosemary Clooney had a nervous breakdown.
Yes, I know. She was institutionalized, I believe.
After that night.
Yeah,
that's right.
And she was already reeling from the death of Reverend King.
That's right.
As we all were, of course.
Sure.
But
2 months earlier.
Yeah.
I want people to understand that they're going to be seeing characters on the screen, and to me is just unbelievably good.
She's stunning in the film.
She is stunning. Sharon Stone is
She's a revelation.
She is.
Yeah.
And I suspect a lot of people around Oscar time are going to be pointing that out to the general public, because a lot of folks in this are giving performances of their careers.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, and listen, you went in and did this. Now, I started to ask you before, this process, the script gets finished. And,
right.
And I know I'm skipping ahead.
No, that's okay.
But the script is finished, and it starts to circulate. And then, talk about your phone ringing, people are beating down the door to do this script.
Well, there was a lull, though, truth be told. I mean, I started writing in 2000. I finished it in 2001. Mm. And then 9/11 happened. And the studios really turned a blind eye and a deaf ear to me. I mean, not only for the screenplay, but just because even if they liked it, they couldn't fathom somebody like me putting it all together.
Yeah.
And so we languished there for quite a while. And then, of course, the world turned upside down again.
Yeah.
And the movie has, or the script, anyway, and the story seemed to have more relevance. And I think that that's what attracted a lot of these actors.
Was it Harvey Weinstein who basically said, I'm going to take a flyer on this and commit to it?
Harvey didn't come to this until April of this year.
Really?
The movie was already in the can. We started rolling Halloween Day, 2005. We finished it right before Christmas. But I tell you what's interesting about that. I thought that we had made a purely American film about an American icon in this tragic day in American history. And once Harvey got involved, he insisted that we take the film out to Europe for a test drive as a work in progress. And we took it to Venice. We took it to the Deauville Film Festival.
And they went nuts.
They went bananas. And,
yeah.
And the French says, you've made the movie for France. And
oh, my God, you're Jerry Lewis.
it left me scratching my head. However, the next day we did roundtable interviews with foreign journalists. And one woman who was from Greece, she said, look, you know, this movie reminds us of the America that we miss, the America that we love. And it really hit home for me.
Sure.
That's exactly why it resonated so much and so strongly with the European community.
Well, it will resonate, I think, with the American community equally. I wish we could, you know, I could talk to you about this for days, and I'm so grateful that you were able to take the time to come on.
Of course. No, it's my pleasure.
The movie is Bobby. It is being released nationwide today. Do yourself a favor. Take someone you love and go see this film. It is a movie you will never forget. Emilio Estevez has been our guest on Politically Direct. Emilio, best of luck, and again, thank you for making this film.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your words. They mean more than I can express, and I truly mean that.
You are listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Oh! Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you get all the answers to the, all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
At Cash Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cash Creek Casino Resort.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things and going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. Your own personal internet. That is you and me. You and me. Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
You look like a perfect fit. A girl in need of a
Welcome back. We're continuing our discussion about the life and legacy of Robert F. Kennedy. As I said, Monday would have been his 81st birthday, which is hard to believe. And the movie that bears his name, Bobby, has just opened nationwide. Joining me now is someone who has been a guest on this program before. I'm delighted to welcome him back. Harry Belafonte, welcome back to Politically Direct.
My pleasure.
Mr. Belafonte, I have seen this movie. It is a revelation to see these performances. Your performance is terrific, and so many people, these are such human stories that Emilio Estevez has pulled together as a backdrop for what happened, and it is not a political film per se, it's a very human movie that really interweaves people's stories about that moment in our history.
Yes, I had felt when I first read the script that Emilio Estevez had taken on a daunting task. And when I read through it, it's very rare that you have to go through a script a second time to make sure you hadn't missed anything, because so much of it was just so unusual in the way all those characters were strung together. And of course, near the end of the film, when you hear so much from Bobby, and later on when they edited it and began to put more of Bobby's voice even in the beginning of the film, what really took hold was comparisons I'm sure that everybody who sees the film are going to be making. And that is that when you hear the voice of Bobby Kennedy and comments of the period from the various characters in the film, where they were and what hopes and aspirations were in that time, all of a sudden you begin to realize how much we have missed and how much has been lost compared to where we are today.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, one of the things I want to talk to you both about this film, and as I say, we've been talking about Robert Kennedy all week on this program. We've had Theodore Sorensen on. We've had Paul Schrade, who worked closely with him in California. I am so amazed at the connections and the interconnectedness. I was a 12-year-old volunteer for Robert Kennedy on that campaign in 1968, so that was the touchstone of my personal political life. It all began that year. But I was reading a story, and I want to ask you about this, that you had told a story about the early days of the civil rights movement. And when Robert Kennedy had been made attorney general, a lot of people in the civil rights movement were very discouraged by this. They didn't trust Robert Kennedy at all. And do you know the story that I'm talking about?
I know it very well.
Can you share it with the audience? Because it's a remarkable story, and more so for its impact later. But what happened when Robert Kennedy was made attorney general?
Almost everyone in the movement was waiting with great anticipation for the person that John Kennedy would assign to the role of attorney general. Because anyone who was cast in that responsibility was going to be an individual with whom we're going to have to be spending a lot of time, because almost everything from a legal perspective that the civil rights movement had to go through really had to do with how we were received by the federal branches of government and what federal laws we could evoke in behalf of our interests, in behalf of our cause.
So the Justice Department was extremely important.
It was the most critical agency of all the government agencies in our experience. All of our problems were mostly rooted, from a legal perspective, were rooted in states' rights and state laws. And in case after case after case, black people and Hispanic people and peoples of color, I'm talking about Native Americans as well, tried to appeal again and again to the states that had these very draconian laws and these very oppressive laws on the issue of race. And we very rarely, if ever, won any of our cases in any meaningful way in a state's court. So the federal courts became our only hope, because in the federal courts, which is expected to defend the Constitution of the United States of America, clearly our legal rights had been oppressed. We were being cruelly treated by the states, and our only appeal was the federal government. So when Bobby Kennedy was appointed, first of all, I don't think anybody had expected that he would have been the choice.
Well, you know, the story is that President Kennedy, when he decided to do it, thought that perhaps the best thing to do is to go out on his front step in Georgetown at 2 in the morning and whisper, "It's Bobby."
Yeah, I tell you, well, I could well believe that that would have been a process. It's very humorous to hear, because when you said Bobby, the rest of us, especially some of us who had been caught up with what his earlier commitments and his work had been, it wrote a kind of a doomsday message for us. This man who was, he was feared only after one other attorney, Roy Cohn.
Right.
And I think between Bobby Kennedy and Roy Cohn, the House Un-American Activities Committee onto the...
The Senate Committee, actually. They were both on the Senate Committee with McCarthy.
Yes, McCarthy.
And, of course, Robert Kennedy had become a sworn enemy of Roy Cohn after a while. They had worked together, and then they... bitter enemies. But so you didn't trust, based on his previous experience, and you and Dr. King and other leaders in the Civil Rights Movement were very skeptical. Understandably
so. Well, Dr. King wasn't skeptical. Dr. King was very practical. He may have had his doubts. There may have been some skepticism. But after we sat in strategy meetings, we bemoaned the fact that this man who was not of our class, certainly not of our color, and who had been a devout Catholic, was somehow wrapped in all of those images that spelled for us a very, very difficult, if not a hopeless task in trying to appeal our case. And Dr. King listened to each of us and the points of view that were put out, and he said to us, well, the reality is that the president is John Kennedy and the attorney general is Bobby. And your task is to get past the fact that there has been this past history, and your responsibility will be to find his moral center and to win him to our cause.
Huh.
And with that instruction, which we all felt was a daunting task, the idea that we should win Bobby Kennedy to our cause seemed such a remote possibility that we looked at it with great personal skepticism. But we had our instruction and we felt compelled to go do the work. As history unfolded, we discovered that we were able to find his moral center. We were able to lead him to ideas and thoughts and experiences that he had not been mindful of. And through that process, I think he went through his own transformation. I think he began to see poverty in ways in which he had never seen it before. I think he began to see injustice in the ways in which he'd never seen it before. He'd seen the basis for misinformation and distortion of truths that puzzled him, if not overwhelmed him.
Mr. Belafonte, is it true that one of the ways, and again, those of you, when Dr. King said, find a way to bring him, win him over, that you went to his bishop? Is this true, his Catholic bishop with whom he was close, and tried to reach him in that way through his faith?
There were those in the movement who had relationships to the ecumenical community that did that, tried to appeal through ecumenical sources to find that moral center in Bobby Kennedy. I personally had no connection with that, although I know that has been reported as such.
Here's what's remarkable about this. I was reading this in preparation for talking with you today, and Bono, the singer Bono from U2, who has done so much extraordinary work around the world on poverty, on the issue of AIDS, and who has also found the ability to communicate with people who might be considered polar opposites and potentially talk about skepticism, people like Jesse Helms and even George Bush, with whom he's met. He says, Bono says, that his inspiration for reaching across and trying to reach out to people for whom there seems to be no common ground was you telling him this story about Dr. King and Robert Kennedy.
I had mentioned that the ecumenical community did that. I personally did not linger on it as a mission of my own. I told him everything I just told you, and we spent a long time discussing redemption. Is there room for transformation? Is there room for change? Can one who have had the kind of stripes that Bobby Kennedy did up until that moment, can he be expected to change his stripes, given his race, given his class position, and given his political bent? We discussed that for a very long time.
And it clearly had an impact on him.
Yes, it did.
He writes, and let me quote here, it was a great lesson for me, because what Dr. King was saying, and again through you, was don't respond to caricature. The left, the right, the progressives, the reactionary. Don't take people on rumor. Find the light in them, because that will further your cause. And what, again, we're talking about the life of Robert Kennedy, the great line from his speech in South Africa about the ripple of hope.
Yes.
here you dropped a pebble in a pond with Bono, told him this story, and it's had an impact hugely on his activism, his ability to make a difference in the world based on the lesson of Robert Kennedy's ability to find his moral center.
That's why I always dismiss anyone who says you're really talking to the wind. No one will heed you. No one will pay attention. And I often say, if you're talking to thousands and one voice speaks out in approval and understands what you're trying to say and then acts upon that, then I think you can consider your mission successful. And I think that what's happened to Bono and many others, myself included, because people spoke to me and transformed me from what I was to what I became. And I think that that's always there. Some people would even say to you, what's the point in talking? A lot of times you're preaching to the choir. And I remember Dr. King once chiding us by saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with preaching to the choir, because if you don't, they'll stop singing.
Excuse me, Mr. Belafonte, but we need to take a brief break. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. My guest is Harry Belafonte. He's one of the stars of the new motion picture, Bobby, which has just opened nationwide. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sail on, silver girl.
You're listening to the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone.
Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next, burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
That man comes down the chimney. Right?
Yeah.
So we build a fire early on at night.
Right, to keep him out.
And then just prior to midnight, we just start throwing M80s in there. See
nice.
What happens, you know?
Just you know,
it's a festive way to incorporate the holiday season.
Merry Christmas from
Merry
Scott
Christmas
and Sam.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Helpless. Young girls run wild in the streets. Is it a conspiracy? Is it an invasion? Is it a revolution? Yes.
Now, Politically Direct with David Bender on Air America Radio.
It's been a hard
Now, the best of Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel all right. You know I work.
And we're back. We're talking with Harry Belafonte about the life and legacy of Robert F. Kennedy. He's part of the ensemble cast of the movie Bobby, which is now playing in theaters nationwide. Mr. Belafonte, you witnessed so much of the incredible personal growth that people talk about when they remember Robert Kennedy.
I found that Bobby Kennedy, whom when I first met with him, was somewhat severe and distant and cold. After several encounters and several meetings on several different issues, I began to spend more and more time with him. I began to be invited to come have lunch with him. I wound up spending time with he and his family playing touch football.
Were you ever thrown in the pool at Hickory Hill?
Oh, yeah. You didn't mean anything to the Kennedy clan unless you'd been baptized that way. And then by the time Bobby passed away, I think that he became for us not only one of the most powerful voices in America and in the political mainstream, but he also became a man who we could profoundly follow, we could believe in, we could trust. He became a quintessential part of our sense of what the future was going to be. And I think having lost him, began to draw the curtain of darkness on American political and social life. And I think we have been living out that experience ever since, up until this very moment. I think Bobby Kennedy was perhaps, in many ways, as profoundly important and could have had as big an impact on the transformation of America as did Dr. King. Bobby just never had a chance to play out his own personal scenario.
Harry Belafonte, and we just have a moment left. This film, Bobby, was it a labor of love for you and so many? You and Anthony Hopkins are on the screen much of the time. What an experience to work with this ensemble cast in a story like this. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was a gift, least expected. And when the offer was made, and I read the script and then talked to Anthony Hopkins, I knew that divine intervention had taken place, and that at this time in my life to be able to walk with that cast and to work directly with Anthony Hopkins under the loving care of Emilio Estevez was about the best anyone could ask for.
Well, you were about the best that anyone can ask for. I'm honored again to have you on this program, and what you said a moment ago about preaching to the choir. Many people who listen to Air America think that they all agree and that they understand what our values are and what we have to aspire to, but it helps enormously to remember some of the people who have been a part of the struggle for so very long, and I'm including you in that, but also understanding the life of Robert Kennedy helps us to understand what we have to do today, and that's what's so joyous about seeing this movie. You see his words on the screen, and that's tremendous.
Well, I tell you, I think every one of us in the choir are constantly in need of reaffirmation, constantly in need of validation, because our causes are so broad and wide, and the players so varied, that we constantly need to hear from one another that we're still on the right track, that our goals morally and socially and politically are still rich and meaningful, and I think that is what keeps us alive.
Harry Belafonte, thank you again for joining us on Politically Direct. All the best.
Thank you.
You can lie to a child with a smiling face. Tell me that color ain't about a race. You can pat the first stone. You break my bones, but you're never gonna break.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CD
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. Saddam Hussein could be in Iraqi custody and executed before the weekend is out. CBS News correspondent David Martin has details from the Pentagon.
Saddam Hussein is still in American custody, but a U.S. military officer says that the U.S. military plans to turn him over to the Iraqis within the next 36 hours. The same officer says that he expects the Iraqis will execute him before the start of a religious holiday on Sunday, which marks the conclusion of the annual pilgrimage to Mecca.
The Bush administration also reportedly believes the execution could happen before the weekend is out. President Bush is meeting at his Crawford Ranch with his advisors to come up with a new Iraq strategy, but he indicated today they haven't made any decisions.
Got more consultation to do. Until I talk to the country about the plan, obviously we'll continue to work with the Iraqi government.
It's been a frustrating couple of weeks for travelers at Denver's International Airport, and now another blizzard is on the way, threatening to ground airline passengers again. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobiella is there.
This second storm, with expected snowfall up to 2 feet, is moving in while much of Colorado is still catching its breath from last week's blizzard. Store shelves still need restocking, and streets need clearing. Roads closed last week, and so did the airport.
You remember, this airport was built to unclog the western skies. Well, it needs a little Drano down the street here.
Airline industry analyst Michael Boyd says a lack of planning was part of the reason thousands of passengers became stranded at Denver International Airport last week. Another factor, the airlines are doing such good business these days that there are few seats available on a new flight when one is canceled.
It's one of the nation's 10 busiest airports. Seven New Orleans police officers have been indicted in the shooting of two men in a case that could further damage that department's reputation. Here's reporter Dave Cohen.
Police shot and killed the suspects in the chaotic aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The defense attorney says they acted within the law, but the district attorney says they shot New Orleans citizens down as if they were rabid dogs. The grand jury agreed with the DA and handed down indictments, including first-degree murder charges.
The two men, one mentally retarded, were shot on a bridge connecting two flooded neighborhoods. He is wearing a blue suit, white gloves, and silver shoes. James Brown's coffin is gold, and it sits on the stage at New York's Apollo Theater. Thousands of fans have filed past to pay their respect. The Reverend Al Sharpton said today Brown changed the beat of music all over the world.
One era had a Bach, and another era had a Beethoven. Well, we had Brown. And Al Brown composed and impacted music just like they did.
On Wall Street today, the Dow finished off 9 points. This is CBS News.
Thousands of people have doubled, tripled, even quadrupled their income, not by working harder and not by working longer hours, rather by working smarter, by working from home.
I make as much as $25,000 a month. You didn't have to have, you know, some special training or anything like that.
Your whole life can change.
Our first year in a business, we made $78,000.
I found this incredible opportunity. Last month, I made over $14,000.
We'll guide and mentor you to a lucrative opportunity where you can make money right from your own home. As with any independent business, there are no guarantees regarding income or success, and results will vary.
I started making an extra $5,000 a month, just very, very part-time.
I now make $5,000 a month, and it's simple, fun, almost magical.
Go to betterjobplease.com and get started today. And respond now while this is still a free service. Go to betterjobplease.com. That's betterjobplease.com. Betterjobplease.com. Betterjobplease.com.
The government believes meat and milk from cloned animals is safe, but as Barry Bagnato reports, consumers aren't so sure.
The FDA says it's a long way from making a final decision about meat and milk from cloned animals, but right now it has nothing but positive things to say about its safety, about its promise. The agency's Dr. Steven Sundloff says producers could copy animals with the best traits,
such as disease resistance or improved meat quality.
Polls show major consumer opposition. Mark Walton, head of the cloning services company Viagen, hopes that'll change now.
Most consumers were looking for information from a trusted source like the FDA to help them make a decision.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
How fast are we multiplying? When 2007 arrives, the U.S. will have nearly 2.9 million people more than a year ago. The Census Bureau says that's one birth every 8 seconds, one death every 11 seconds. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
Tax saving.
I'm News.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome to Eco Talk. The holidays are here, but we're not taking time off, at least not today. We're going to bring you fresh news, and it's a slightly different take this time. We're nearing the end of the year, of course, and so our thoughts are on transition, resolutions, and resolve to make progress in the year to come. We'll begin the transition with trans fats. Stephen Joseph, founder and CEO of BanTransFat.com, has taken on and beaten the largest corporations in the world over the partially hydrogenated fats they were putting in so much of our food, thus kicking off a national movement and setting another example of how David can beat Goliath. In our second half, Treehugger Thursday with Simran Sethi, she'll be chatting with online journalism pioneer Arianna Huffington about her transition from right-winger to passionate progressive populist. And finally, NRDC Communications Director Phil Guttis interviews NRDC President Francis Beinecke about the critical role that the American heartland could play in a biofueled future. Want to thank one of our partners, EcoTalk. Is proud to be sponsored in part by the Union of Concerned Scientists, a science-based nonprofit combining independent research and citizen action to achieve innovative solutions for a healthy environment and a safer world, on the web at ucsusa.org. Also, the NRDC and Earth Justice helping to make this program possible. Our first guest is the man behind the healthier Oreo cookie. His name is Stephen Joseph. As CEO and founder of BanTransFat.com, Joseph sued Kraft in 2003 for putting trans fats in kid-marketed Oreo cookies, and single-handedly started a national movement to eliminate the dreaded fats in products on grocery shelves in our country and beyond. Thanks to Stephen Joseph's work, we are all eating heart-healthier diets today, and it is a great honor and thrill to have you in the studio here on Green Street, because you are a longtime friend and a hero of mine, because what you have done, showing the power of one. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
Every time I hear a news story, my husband and I, we just say, that's Stephen's work, that's Stephen's work. You really have triggered something that is so important. I know that I read labels in a way I didn't before and have changed what I buy, what my family eats. How does it feel to have really started something that's not only big, but getting bigger by the day?
Well, it really is getting bigger. I mean, the momentum is fantastic. The trans-fat-free city concept, which we started in Tiburon, spread to New York and is now spreading nationwide. The food companies are now taking trans fat out of their products. new products are being created, which are just the same in taste, in texture, and in price as the previous products, which had trans fat. So in all respects, this campaign has been a wonderful success, I'm really happy to say.
You took this on because of a personal experience. Your father, you believe, was a victim of trans fats?
Well, my stepfather, yes. He was a great margarine lover. He lived on bread and margarine, and I believe, I'm 99.9% sure, that he had never heard of trans fats when he died. First of all, he got type 2 diabetes and then had a cardiac arrest. We don't know for sure that the cause of death or a contributor to his death was excessive consumption of trans fat, but certainly I think that we had a right to know that trans fat even existed. It wasn't on the label.
Well, I remember when margarine first became popular, there was a sense that you could eat it with abandon because it was healthier than butter, when au contraire.
That's what we were told. That's certainly what I was told when I was a kid, that margarine is better than butter, but it's just not true. Margarine, at least partially hydrogenated soybean or other vegetable oil margarine, is lethal.
Now, trans fats, why are they so dangerous? Is it because they just don't break down?
No, I mean, there are a lot of myths about trans fat. The primary problem with trans fat is that it drives down your good cholesterol. That's the HDL cholesterol. Now, why do we need that cholesterol? We need that cholesterol to keep our arteries clear. Without it, our arteries clog up very, very quickly. So eating a lot of trans fat accelerates the clogging of arteries. Another problem is that it limits the ability of the arteries to dilate. Supposing you have a rush of blood through a clogged artery and your artery won't expand to accept that rush of blood, what happens is you have a heart attack. And so you have to be very, very careful with trans fat because you want your arteries to dilate, especially as you get older. You need flexible arteries. There are other problems too, but those are the primary concerns. More research is being done on other, you know, negative effects of trans fat. But those negative effects I've mentioned are sufficient a reason to take trans fat off the shelf.
Now, you've made this movement so successful, perhaps we could recruit you to work on global warming next, ban global warming, ban emissions. I know you've talked to me about taking on the automakers, and that's been done. Dan Lockyer has filed the suit that we've talked about, which is a nuisance suit, saying that the automakers are spoiling our air and our environment. And that seems to be a good thing to do. I mean, in many ways, we're, you know, overly litigious in this country, but I think in this case, this is one example where the lawsuit, you know, regardless of whatever financial outcome there was, really got the point across in a big way.
Well, I don't think we're overly litigious when the issue is...
You're a lawyer, so I know
you'd
say.
Yeah, well, okay.
I'm married to a lawyer. He doesn't think so either, but that's
no,
my personal
No, I don't think
opinion.
We're overly litigious on issues that need to be addressed and aren't being addressed by the federal government.
And this is hardly a frivolous suit.
This is, exactly. I mean, global warming, the Bill Lockyer's lawsuit, unfortunately, it was necessary because the federal government was is neutralized by, you know, campaign contributions in Washington, D.C. The same with the trans fat issue. You know, I wasn't going to sit around and wait for the federal government to do something on this, knowing how much money the food corporations are paying to, you know, congressmen and senators in the form of campaign contributions. Congress is neutralized. I'm a former Washington, D.C. lobbyist. I know how to get things done in Washington, or at least I used to, before Washington became so awash in money. Now nobody can get anything done.
I remember when you filed suit against Kraft because of the Oreo, people said, well, why Oreos? And you said that's because it's just sort of a symbol of an all-American food that most people don't think of as being dangerous.
Yeah, it was a domino theory. I mean, if the Oreo fell, then all the other Kraft products would fall after that, and other manufacturers, their products would fall too. And it's exactly what's been happening.
Has this gone beyond what you even expected to happen in terms of the impact?
Yes and no. I mean, it was my intention not to give up until partially hydrogenated oils, which contain trans fat, disappeared completely. That was my fixation, to make that happen. So I suppose, you know, my expectation was that I could, but I'm very happy to see it happening.
And then you took on McDonald's over a similar issue. Tell us about that one.
What happened was McDonald's announced in 2002 that it was changing the cooking oil that it was using so that French fries would contain 48% less trans fat than they previously did. And they announced also at the same time that this change would take place within 6 months. It was the largest corporate announcement in American history. They reached over 214 million people through TV and radio. 6 months later, the oil was supposed to be changed. It never happened. And they didn't tell the public. They issued the press release on a Friday night, three sentences to say they were delaying. Almost no newspapers picked it up. I know of no TV stations or radio stations that picked it up. And there was no press release on the McDonald's website. So they didn't tell anyone. People assumed they had made the change to the new healthier cooking oil. So I called them and I said, well, so what's the story? You haven't made the change. You didn't tell anyone. Why? And they said, well, we have operational issues. And I said, well, what are they? They say, we can't tell you. So I sued them.
And what's happened there?
And 2 years later, after an enormously difficult process, the case was settled. McDonald's was forced to put notices up in every single McDonald's restaurant in the United States, on every door, on every drive-through window and at the counter, saying they hadn't changed the oil.
Why don't they just change the oil?
Well, we'll get to that. And they also had to pay $7 million to the American Heart Association for a trans fat program. Why didn't they change the oil? I didn't sue them for not changing the oil as a matter of health policy. I sued them for not telling the public they hadn't changed the oil when they said they would. They haven't changed the oil because it's a very, very big job for a company like McDonald's to change the cooking oil for a number of reasons. First reason is they have to maintain exactly the same taste. If there's one company... If there's one restaurant that you eat at where you know exactly how the food is going to taste, it's McDonald's. And if they're off even slightly, it can affect them greatly. It's not like that with other chains, interestingly enough. But McDonald's is unique. So McDonald's has had a tough time replicating the exact taste of the French fries.
Which are my favorite thing there. Not that I go there anymore, but that used to be the one thing I'd get when my daughter got a burger, you know. So it's something that's popular, and that's because of the perfect consistency. But it hasn't changed. You're saying it's not any fresher, healthier oil that they're frying the fries in now.
Well, according to first of all, I know more than I'm able to say, but let's say what's in the press is that they are experimenting and trying out a new cooking oil in a large number of restaurants at the moment. And if that's a successful experiment, then I assume they'll implement.
Okay, we can only hope because there's a lot of McDonald's all around the country and lots of people still eating it, many people not even aware of this. So,
well, they're feeding about 22 million people a day in this country.
That adds up. We're going to come back right after these messages and continue our conversation with Stephen Joseph, the founder of BanTransFat.com. I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left Channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under the new media. And can you hear the sound of hysteria? The subliminal mind, America.
Pamela Falk, a joy talking to you.
Well, you know I'm your biggest fan. You go from hilariously funny to unbelievably informed.
And then they cry. And then they cry.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Welcome back to Eco Talk, and Stephen Joseph is joining us in studio. I've heard him on many talk shows, radio and television over the years, and since he is a friend, I said I want to have him on. And even though this isn't environmental news in the strict sense that we sometimes use as a filter, it is a story about how one person can make a difference. In fact, he has taken on Kraft and McDonald's and has won successful cases. We were talking about that right before the break, what happened with McDonald's. And, of course, the connection between polluting our environment on the outside and personally and some of the things that we put out there or put into our bodies that we're not necessarily meaning to do harm or not aware of, I think that's the connection here, whether it's what's coming out of the tailpipes of, you know, SUVs or what's, you know, going into our food pipes, you know, where we think it's healthy because otherwise they wouldn't sell it. We're learning a lot more about how we can't have that assumption.
Well, it's, you know, trans fat is a form of food pollution. I guess it really is the same issue as pollution in the air. I mean, pollution in the air affects the lungs. Pollution in the food, in this case, affects the heart. So, you know, they're just a few inches apart in the human body. It's really the same issue. Are we causing ourselves to become unhealthy as a result of what's out there put into the air, put into the food by corporate America?
So you started this ban trans fat movement that's taken hold in Tiburon, California, because that happens to be where you live, and I do too, New York City. That's a big one. I mean, Tiburon is kind of symbolic, but New York City and then others, I think Boston and Chicago, are considering following in their steps.
Tiburon was the first, and New York City came to us after we did Tiburon and asked if we could help them do the same thing in New York.
A little bigger job.
Yeah, a little bigger. But
how many restaurants per square block in Manhattan alone?
Well, there are 20,000 restaurants in
Tiburon
in
has
Manhattan.
Five, by the way. There's one main
Tiburon
street.
Tiburon has 18.
That's more
it's
than
three and a half
about.
Times larger than
only
you.
Only five good ones. Only five worth going to. So there's been criticism that, you know, this should not be something that's regulated. Mandated. It should be something that, you know, it's an individual choice. What do you say to that?
Trans fat is odorless, trans fat is tasteless, and trans fat is invisible. So how are you going to make a choice if you can't see it?
And, it's
anyway, given a choice between two foods, both being identical, one with trans fat, one without. What kind of choice is it where you say, do you want the one with trans fat or do you want the one without? Only someone suicidal would want the one with trans fat. So it's a silly choice, and it's a silly argument.
Okay, going back to Kraft, when you filed your Oreo suit in 2003, I understand partially hydrogenated oil was in about 40% of the food on grocery store shelves. Because of your work and those who have followed in your footsteps, how has that percentage changed?
I have no idea, but a lot.
Mm-hmm. Wheat thins, for instance, now zero trans fat. And by the way, when you see zero trans fat, is that accurate? Can you count on that being true?
All right, well, let me answer the first question. What percentage of products on the supermarket shelf now contain trans fat? Even products that contain trans fat contain a lot less trans fat than they did before. So that's the key. And, a product that may say that it contains zero trans fat doesn't necessarily contain zero trans fat, but it contains a lot less. So that's a good thing. The other question is, can we rely on when a product says that it contains zero trans fat? The answer is no. You have to look at the list of ingredients. If the words partially hydrogenated are in the list of ingredients, that product contains trans fat and you shouldn't eat it. It doesn't make any difference whether or not the nutrition facts label says zero. That is a legally permitted misrepresentation that is in the law. It's an FDA regulation. The FDA says if a product contains less than half a gram per serving of trans fat, it must be listed as zero.
Okay, you talked about how many millions eat at McDonald's. Taco Bell and KFC can't be far behind, and apparently they're not far behind in taking on banning trans fat. Is that going to happen, and when?
I think all the major chains are either doing it or about to announce. I don't think there's going to be anyone left in the next 6 months that hasn't made an announcement. It's really become a total victory in that sense. The problem is not the fast food, believe it or not. We may be on the verge of fast food being healthier than some of the slow food in the country. Quality restaurants are serving partially hydrogenated oil, yet you can go to McDonald's and get, or you will be able to go to McDonald's and get a healthy oil. So it's kind of an odd situation. The problem is to find a way to get the smaller restaurants to make the choice, and also bakeries.
Okay, and then, of course, our interest in is you've been so successful getting the public to really take on this issue. What do you suggest we do to get similar action, a tipping point, a real turning point on global warming action?
Oh, well, you surprised me with that
one. Which is almost as big as trans fat.
Well, the first thing you do is you don't wait for the federal government to do anything because they're not going to help. And even if the Democrats are in power, you have a Republican president, so it's not going to happen. And who knows what's going to happen in 2008.
Can't be worse.
I think, first of all, you have to litigate. There's no choice. I mean, there's really no other effective way. You have to have as much litigation as possible.
And in fact,
about
that's happening
emissions.
In the Supreme Court now with states taking
right.
action.
But what I'd also like to see is other states copying what California has done. I think, Governor Schwarzenegger's initiative, which is a bipartisan initiative, is a very good thing. Another state should be looking at that model and saying, let's do the same thing.
And we don't have inconsistent standards. Which the automakers are still litigating against. They should start innovating and stop litigating because aren't we going in that direction?
Yes.
You just can't.
Yes. It's like New York and the transfat-free city, which other cities are copying. What I've said to the other cities is take the New York regulation and copy it word for word because you want to have consistent standards nationwide. And they've gone through the process on that one. For other states, I would say copy California on global emissions. You may have different standards, but keep the same wording, keep the same concepts, and let's try and do this state by state and not wait for the federal government.
In our last minute, what's on the horizon for your organization in 2007? What are your next targets?
Helping the transition to transfat-free oils in restaurants and bakeries nationwide.
And also on grocery store shelves?
Grocery store shelves. Oh, that's happening anyway.
Is this full-time for you? Has this taken over your work life anyway?
It's more than full-time. It's full-time, it's evenings, it's weekends, it's nonstop.
That's why we haven't seen you much anymore. And, of course, I'm pretty busy, too.
Well, give me a call.
We live about 5 blocks away. We see each other in synagogue every now and then. Thank you so much. You inspire me, and I'm sure all our listeners, with what you can do, what one guy can do. Keep that in mind as you go about your work. And who knows? You could take on a little hobby and end up being consumed by
a liberal dose of
better.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com. Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Has become a prominent voice in politics and one of the most popular sources for progressive news and views. Ariana is a nationally syndicated columnist, author of 10 books, and a self-proclaimed former right-winger who has evolved into a compassionate and progressive populist. A longtime Toyota Prius owner, Ariana described her 2003 run for California governor against Arnold Schwarzenegger as the hybrid versus the Hummer. And she's a co-creator of the Detroit Project, a provocative public interest group that's educated consumers about SUVs and lobbied the auto industry to make cars that reduce America's oil dependence. So in your book, Fanatics and Fools, you first stress the need for energy independence. Do you think that we're any closer to achieving that goal now than when you penned those words?
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately, our dependence on foreign oil has increased. And despite a lot of lofty rhetoric from the White House and supposed commitment to renewable energy, the fact is that we are more dependent now than we were before and that no serious major steps are being taken to reduce that dependence. And, you know, one of the easiest things to do would be obviously to improve CAFE standards so that we don't have these major problems we have now with SUVs being able to bypass the regulations that apply to other cars about their mileage.
Do you think that the major sort of opportunity for change then lies in government inflicting stronger standards, or do you think it's really with consumers demanding more energy-efficient vehicles and higher standards?
Well, right now it's clear that it has to be with consumers. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. I bought my first Toyota hybrid car in 2001 when my children were making fun of me because they looked like little golf carts with a hood. And now they have improved, and then you see them everywhere. When I first driving mine, it was like supposed to be something pioneering, and now they're everywhere. And that was really driven by consumers, especially after the increase in gas prices, and then peer pressure, and that's the good thing about peer pressure, and a lot of it also helped that you had celebrities who used their celebrity, their arrival at sort of Oscar events and other mad photograph events in Priuses to help others make the right consumer choice.
Now, you co-founded the Detroit Project, which was a project to teach citizens about the disadvantages of SUV driving and to lobby automakers to start producing more fuel-efficient cars as a means of reducing our dependence on foreign oil. How successful was that project, and where does it stand today?
You know, it was amazingly successful. We spent, under $100,000 to produce ads that were then played by all major networks because they were edgy, because they made tough connections between our dependence on foreign oil and our funding terrorism. And it showed, you know, how much can be done by citizen activists taking matters in their own hands. And what is interesting is that at the time we were attacked in a major way by right-wing radio and many others. And now this issue cuts across party lines, and we have a lot of people on the right, actually, who are supporting it.
Now, another thing that really sort of has been very prominent in the environmental movement is this idea of using fear-based tactics, you know, gloom and doom to try to convince people to change their behavior. And what I really appreciate about your latest book on becoming fearless in love, work, and life is the idea of really challenging that fear-based model.
Well, I'm glad you say that. Well, yes, I really don't think this is the way to bring about fundamental social change. And I think fear-mongering leadership is the kind that we've had so much during the whole Bush administration years. And I think in 2006, in a sense, the victory of the Democrats was a victory that was due partly to the public not buying into the fear-mongering.
How can we become fearless about the climate change challenges that lie ahead?
Well, you know, if you remember FDR, you know, saying the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, I mean, at the time, our country was going through terrible times, you know, and later on, while he was president, he had to deal with the Depression, he had to deal with the Second World War, the presence of really huge challenges does not need to provoke fear. It needs to provoke a determination to act. And that was really when the best of this country came forward during 9/11. You know, it was a time and a day filled with fear. But at the same time, it was a day filled with fearlessness because people rose to the occasion and it brought the best out in people.
Ariana is one of the judges of TreeHugger's Convenient Truths user-created video contest. Log on to truths.treehugger.com to find out more about posting your video solutions to climate change and winning prizes including an all-expense-paid trip to the Alaskan wilderness and a mini green home makeover. Thanks to our music supplier, CalabashMusic.com, and thanks to you for listening.
And thank you, TreeHugger. If you want to increase the efficiency of your water heater, listen up to this tip from Nerdy Books, Just the Facts on the Environment Man. Easy to install pre-cut blankets, or jackets as they're called, for electric water heaters are widely available these days and cost just about $15. Your local utility company may offer them at a lower price, give you a rebate, or even install them at no cost. When properly installed, a water heater blanket can save about $100 a year in fuel costs and, of course, also reducing the amount of energy required and emissions that go out because of that energy being produced. All around, a win-win. Stay with us when we come back. A chat with the president of the Natural Resources Defense Council.
You're listening to AM 1320.
Theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Something at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of truths.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
And welcome back. As the potential of biofuels becomes more apparent, it's clear that the American heartland may play an important role in solving our global warming challenge. That was a big topic of discussion this year at the 28th Annual Prairie Festival, where Francis Beinecke, president of the Natural Resources Defense Council, just happened to be a guest speaker. As part of our ongoing partnership with the NRDC, Francis spoke about the festival with NRDC Communications Director Phil Guttis.
Well, the Prairie Festival is a fabulous event that's held in Salina, Kansas, and it is really a celebration of sustainable agriculture. This time there were 800 people who gathered in a barn over a two-day period to talk about what the future held really for the prairie, for the heartland of the country. And it was both a very inspiring experience for me and also a learning one, because the natural resource of the prairie, of course, is the soil.
Was your message one of biofuels?
One of the issues that I focused on was biofuels, because that, of course, is a very important issue and concern to them, because crops that are grown for fuel will be grown in the heartland of the country. That's something that we hope happens. How it happens is critical, and that's where they play an important role. How the soil is conserved, whether pesticides are used or not, what the issues are with water quality and availability and quantity. These are all issues that need to be addressed as we promote at NRDC biofuels future. Several people came up to me who are concerned about biofuels and suggested that perhaps the issue could be totally addressed through promoting more energy efficiency. And of course, energy efficiency is the quickest, cheapest, fastest way to reduce carbon emissions, but it doesn't reduce them enough. And for those people who are familiar with what's called the wedge diagram, the documentation for what the choices are, you realize that, you know, there's no single solution. As Bill McGibbon says, there's no silver bullet, there's only buckshot. That's really the issue here. We have to choose a lot of alternatives. We have to do them in the most environmentally appropriate way. So actually going to Kansas, talking with people about what their concerns were, not only on biofuels, but also on wind. And Kansas is the state with the number three wind potential. But again, how the turbines are sited, how important landscapes are protected in the process is very much in the forefront of these people's minds.
When you think of Kansas and the prairie and switchgrass and corn and everything, you'd think almost dollar signs for biofuels. Do they not see it that way?
I think they do see it that way, but as I say, industrial agriculture is usually not dollar signs for the small farmer. One of the things that is happening is very interesting. A lot of farmers are gathering together in co-ops creating ethanol ventures that they control, and they do see that as an opportunity, but they want to be the decision maker. And I think, you know, that's a key component of it, is to really be responsible for what the future is and not have it dictated by the outside, by very large industrial agriculture where their voice is not heard.
With global warming, one of the impacts that I've read about and I think that we've been talking about are the impact on soil. And obviously these people care so much about the soil. What was your message there in terms of sort of global warming and soil?
Well, the group that sponsors the Prairie Festival, the Land Institute, is a fascinating organization that's really focused on perennial crops, basically shifting agriculture from monoculture to perennial crops that don't actually tear up the soil on an annual basis and lose a lot to erosion and other things. They held up some prairie plants which have literally a 10-foot root system that goes deep into the soil. And, of course, that creates the life of the soil and holds it together. So, you know, I really think that they are part of the answer, too. Their knowledge on perennial agriculture, how you could actually develop either food or fuel from a perennial crop base, is something that'll be very much part of the solution.
One of the things I've been reading is that global warming will take quite a whack at soil, take the moisture out of, what, 60% of the moisture out of the soil?
Yes.
And was that one of your critical messages for them?
You know, they're very, very aware of that, and they're concerned about it. We spend a lot of time thinking about global warming. We know what the range of solutions are and that you really have to pick a number of them. There's no single thing that you can do to solve this problem. That message has not gotten out as powerfully as it really needs to, because people who love vistas don't want wind farms. People who are concerned about agricultural impacts are concerned about biofuels. They're equally concerned about the impacts of coal. One of the things that happened at the conference is literally scores of people came up to me who were concerned about a giant coal-fired power plant which is about to be located in western Kansas to supply power to Colorado. And I think that our challenge is to give the whole picture, to have conversations and dialogue with people about what the range of solutions are and what the trade-offs are. Because, you know, it is very easy if you're focused on one resource to say, well, I want to protect this resource, and you go figure out a different solution. Well, it just isn't that easy anymore. If you use electricity in your home on a daily basis, you can no longer push this away to someone else's problem. People have to take responsibility for their own power needs and understand that the choices are going to affect them. It's not for somebody else to solve in a different location.
And thank you, Francis and Phil, and thank you, NRDC, for helping to make EcoTalk possible. Also, our other sponsors and partners, all of them, Earth Justice, Union of Concerned Scientists, are our environmental partners. And we want to ask you to support our advertising sponsors, our friends at the Organic Wine Company, the Organic Coffee Company. Want to mention that EcoTalk is unique in the Air America lineup in that we are not really on staff. We are an independent program. We love being on Air America, but this is not a program that is paid for by Air America. If you like our programming and you'd like to hear it continue into 2007, we are here to serve. We love bringing you green radio, greening the red and blue states every day, as we say, about Iraq all day long. And of course, there is connection to oil and national security and energy